Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah. What? We're starting an hour late today. I know this is a little unusual for folks, but there actually was a time when we had our world's greatest doctors panel where we started at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And that was because of Dr. Judy Mikovits way out there on the West Coast, who does all kinds of amazing conferences and travels worldwide and calls worldwide. And you know, she just wasn't, you know, up and ready to go early first thing in the morning on the West Coast because, you know, 7 o'clock here is 5 o'clock out there. And so that was a bit much. So we did that. So today we're only starting an hour late. And that's because we have an incredible guest, Edward, or just Ed Dowd. And so this guy is amazing. He's like one of these, you know, unassuming, brilliant, quiet guys that just the information is devastating. And he's got the numbers and he's got that brain for trends and, you know, to see things that are happening. And what he saw happening, is that a whole bunch of people were dying and he wasn't quite sure why. So he started investigating it. And this is a former BlackRock guy. He had, and I'll talk about this more, you know, when he comes on the air. But he had an investment fund. I guess they gave him a $2 billion growth fund and he turned it into $14 billion. That's growth. That's pretty good. So he sees things that other people don't see. I kind of like to think that we at Action Radio see things that other people don't see, but in a slightly different way, because whereas he was looking at trends in order to invest in them, I'm not looking, you know, for trends. I'm trying to create them. So the whole point here is to do something that no one's ever done before, to create a peaceful revolution of citizen legislators that's never been done. And all the things that we do here are new and different and all over the place. And, oh, I think she's early. I had to check this one. I think I know who this is again. So let me just – I always like to double check my numbers because I've been wrong before. But she's like two – yeah, this is going to be funny if I just hang on to this. Yeah, I thought so. All right. This is Dr. Judy Mikovits. Dr. Judy, you're 2 hours early. I hate to tell you. He's on at 10 o'clock our time, so 8 o'clock your time. Good morning.
Oh, good. That means I could go to sleep. Good morning.
Yeah. Well, I hope I told you yesterday, at least unless I was unclear for any reason about it, you know, because I know it's early. I just saying it's early enough on the West Coast for you and you're so busy anyway. But yeah, can you call in a couple hours or did you want to leave me a question now for Ed?
No, I can call in a couple hours.
Okay, good. Go back to sleep. Set your alarm.
Okay. Okay.
Good night.
I did. Good night.
Text in if you feel like to. All right. Yeah. Good. Just I hate to do that because I know she's so busy. We'll talk, Judy. We'll talk to you later. Go ahead. Just.
This is okay.
Crazy. All right. Yeah. Okay. Please. Just. Yeah. Get some sleep. Call us in a couple hours, and you'll be wide awake and perky and ready to go. And I've got like 3 hours worth of questions for Ed anyway, so I'll definitely have time for you to talk to him as well. All right. So let's get to our regular person here. Not regular for today. Cowgirl Candace. Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I don't know. This is going to be one of those days. I've already got Dr. Judy Mikovits, who I think you talked to before. Was just a tad early for our guest a couple of hours from now. So, Judy, if you want to, I'll just leave your line live. If you want to mute yourself, listen, go to sleep, whatever you want to do, come back in a couple hours. I'll just leave you on the line. So it's up to you what you want to do with it. But I want to talk to Candace because we haven't talked for a little bit, and a lot's been going on with you. Were you here last Friday? I think you were. Yeah, you were here last Friday. Okay, so mm-hmm. Let me get this straight. I'll tell you, just to let folks know, you know, as long as I've been doing this, my many years in broadcasting, like five, I still get a little flustered when I get a real special guest. And so I have a lot of prep that I've been doing for Ed Dowd. And so if I see him a little, you know, probably when I first start talking to him, I tend to talk fast, you know, and get a little discombobulated, but then settle down. And so if I'm more disorganized than usual, that's why. So let me start with you. You want to sort of reintroduce yourself and talk about, what you do, and then we'll get into all the news and events and things that have been happening in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. So I go by Cowgirl Candace for the most part on my social media, and then I run and operate basically my own ranch. So I have a total of 16 horses here. some of them are boarders, but you'll find that my boarders are very involved with what I do. And my main priority is going out on trail rides. I do lessons, and I do camping, and I want to do packing trips. And pretty much if you called me and you asked me, you know, a random question of, well, can you do this? Chances are I'm going to figure out how to do it if it involves the horses. But my business is Believe the Journey Horse Services. I am also going to school to do equine massage as well. But it's, you know, we do have quite a few equine massage therapists here in our area in Milton, Florida, and in Pensacola. But I want to do it a little different. So I also got certified in Reiki, which is energy work. It talks about our chakras and keeping us grounded, which, you know, horses have taught me how to do that more than I think anything else in my life. So when I was younger and I got into the horses and people saw me ride, they saw how calm and collected I was. And then people were like, well, I want you to train my horse, you know. And for a while, I didn't know how to explain what I was doing. And some people still call me the horse whisperer in that aspect. But really, it really goes into our energy. And same thing when I'm rescuing and I'm rehabbing these horses. You know, not only are they coming to me neglected and starved, but some of them are emotionally just broken and have either been ridden hard or abused. And, you know, you really have to dig deep. So part of it's like being a therapist, not only, you know, for the horses, but for people that come too. I kind of give them that Reiki energy and allow them to breathe and feel grounded. And I'm allowing them to do that basically with Mother Nature too. You know, we get out there and we remember to breathe and remember to look around and use all of our senses. So I kind of do a little bit of it all. But my most favorite thing is doing the trail rides and watching people come to me that, you know, have a lot going on in their life, and they get out there and they realize, man, I really just needed this moment to take a break and to enjoy my life and to see nature again and connect with an animal. So that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, but you don't see horses as animals. I mean, I don't see animals as animals. I mean, they're like yeah, you know, fellow creatures, you know, sharing our planet here. So I guess that's always been my philosophy. And people are like, oh, this is an animal. Well, I guess you're just a person then. You know, what does that mean? But you chat, you know, as far as the horse whisperer. I mean, I think that the separation that everybody sees, you know, there's people and there's animals. And you don't see that. I don't see that either. You know, when I'm flying, mm-hmm. you know, I'm riding my bike down the trail and this dragonfly flying beside me, it's like, hey, spirit animal, appreciate you being here. You know, and this is how I've always seen these things. And you see, so do you find that people, when they call you the horse whisperer, you know, it's like, you're really not, you're just doing what you consider natural anyway. Why don't they see mm-hmm. things as you do? And that's kind of, I'm guessing that's what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, and like Reiki work and life coaching and like going out there and running around barefoot, you know, some people's like, what? This girl's crazy. You know, so it's, you know, I was talking to my friend Wendy the other day, who eventually mm-hmm. will join the show. And, you know, people just don't, some people don't get it. And there's going to be those people that don't get it. And then some people long for it, but we all keep it quiet. You know, we keep this little secrecy to ourselves of, because we don't want to be the weird ones, you know. We don't want to, you know, when I say, like you said, you know, when I see a dragonfly cross by or for the first time ever on the trail ride, less than a week ago, we seen some robin eggs, like, tucked in the little crevice of a tree, you know, and I stopped everybody because I wanted everybody to see it. But, you know, I look at those as signs, and when I am having a really bad day or emotionally, you know, just unconnected, you know, I think of what comes across my path. For instance, mm-hmm. I was driving. I don't know if you're familiar with fox squirrels, but they're not native, or I don't know if they're native to our area or not, but they used to be endangered. So they're these huge squirrels. They almost resemble ferrets in a way, and there's two different colors. One looks like a red fox. You have like a brown head, and then it goes into like a red roney body type, but they're huge. They're like sizes of rabbits. And then you got your gray fox squirrels, which have the black head, and they go into like the snow fox look. And for the first time ever, driving, you'll see him at Coldwater. So anybody that's riding with me at Coldwater, always keep a lookout on Buddy Hardy because that's where I see them the most. And that is the road leading up to Coldwater Horse Stables. But anyways, I've seen four of them, and normally I only see like one here and there, but like, it was like literally like it was, something was telling me, you know what, I just need to stop and watch one of these because it's, you know, from leaving Coldwater all the way to Munson Highway, they're literally on the side of the road. And I'm like, four in one day. It was two brown ones and two gray ones. And I'm like, imagine that, you know? So, I want people to be comfortable talking about that. I want us to get back to our roots, and I want us to get back to our spirituality, and I want us to rely on those senses because we've lost them.
Huh. So are these fox squirrels or actual foxes that we're talking about here? I think I might have missed that a little bit.
Fox squirrels, but they look like foxes, as far as coloration goes.
Do you have foxes on the trail? I mean, do you have coyotes?
We
do. What kind of critters are out there? Okay. All right.
Foxes, we have coyotes. A lot of times in the evenings, we see our white-tailed deer. We actually have four different species of different woodpeckers out there, and that's why I want to get Wendy on the show because it's an amazing connection I had with her right off the bat. But she actually is from Jersey and had never been, you know, she thought she lived in a small town in Jersey, and then they came all the way down here, like, pulled everything they had, and they're living right there. They're the camp post at Coldwater Horse Stables, you know, and she was like, it's unbelievable. You know, I thought I was close to nature when I lived in Jersey, but nothing like this, you know, and she was like, I'm the happiest that I've ever been. She's out in nature every day, and even her husband has changed tremendously, you know, and so I'm grateful for the fact that I get to do this for a living and go out there and get to be a part of that and share my passion with others.
We have to redefine crazy. Just to let you know, Marco's listening in the Netherlands, and he sent me a website on the fox squirrel, so I'm going to quickly look this up here. So we have instant response. So I've got Josh in Illinois on the line. I've got Dr. Judy Mikovits, who's, I don't know, either listening in or waiting a couple hours. So I just left her line live. And I've got Marco in the Netherlands. And it's a busy day. we're getting busier too. That's the funny part about Action Radio. Things are about to explode here. But there was a scene. I don't know if you ever saw the movie. Yeah, go ahead. What were you going to say? Go ahead.
Oh, you can go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, so that's a fox squirrel. No, it doesn't look like a fox to me. It looks like a big squirrel. But that's okay. People name things all kinds of stuff. Anyway, there's a scene in the movie Con Air. I don't know if you've ever seen this. It's very violent, and a lot of things blow up, and it's a real dude film. But there's one scene where this guy that plays this total psychopathic murderer, you know, says, well, crazy, you know, crazy is people who, you know, lead a normal life and commute and, pay for houses they can't afford and work a job they can't stand to get a gold watch at the end of 50 years and, you know, retire and die. And, you know, after drooling on a rocking chair for, you know, whatever, he says, that's crazy, you know, and compared to, you know, living your whole life of misery, that to me is crazy. What you and I do, you know, following our passions, that to me seems normal. So I think it's the people that think they're normal, or at least trying to be normal, that are really the crazy ones. And those of us, you know, you ride horses, and I'm saying, look, we can write the laws we consent to be governed by. We can change the world. Well, we mean we can't. What are you talking about? You're crazy. That's, of course we can. You know, so if you redefine crazy in terms of the person who says it to you, and so wait a minute, what are you doing? Tell me how normal your life is. I mean, you don't want to do that and accuse people, but I'm just saying. But if you think about it that way, you know, what's normal and what's crazy? To me, it's through the looking glass. The people that are trying the hardest to be normal are truly insane. And those of us that people think are crazy, we're the normal ones. We're doing what we're supposed to do. We're doing what's natural. We're doing, you know, we're with the earth and the spirit. And, I looked up dragonflies as my spirit animal. Dragonflies represent change. And my entire life, that's the theme. You know, is like massive change, either being having it put upon me or causing it. And I've taken all the changes that were put upon me and using that as a positive to now cause them.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think?
I mean, I think that's amazing that you've been able to spot that out as well, because it definitely helps me the most is seeing that and then going back and saying, there's a reason. There's a reason that I'm seeing these, or there's a reason that it's crossing my path. And I'm the person that I'm like, I want to know the reason, you know? So, and then just me. It helps me in my daily life, and it allows other people, when they come out and they see that I'm utilizing it, then they get to thinking that way, and they're like, man, you know, there's something, there's a logic to this, and I want to get on it.
Yeah, there are reasons for everything, and there's a logic to everything. The question is, do you see it? And there's so many predispositions that people have that don't allow them to see the things that we see because we're open to them. And because they're using that normal framework once again, they tend to block things out. It's like I was thinking about this this morning before the show. The most common thing, you know, somebody new to Action Radio says, well, have you passed any bills yet? In other words, prove to me that you're worthy, you know, of me talking to you. I said, wait a minute, you know, I don't have to prove to you that I'm worthy. I said, we're going to do this. But I said, but it's just interesting that that's the mindset, that in other words, we won't be successful. You know, no one, people don't want to support us until we've already proven that we don't need their help. And I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting. We ain't going to get anywhere that way. Yeah. Anyway, before I take Josh and find out what's going on in Illinois, news, horse stuff, anything, you know, whatever you wanted to talk about, let's kind of start there, and then I'll bring Josh in the conversation here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not too much news other than, you know, we did have a friend that passed away, and that going back into keeping you grounded, you know, when we got the news that he was the missing voter, it was, you know, at first it was just shocking because I consider myself an outdoors person, you know, and if I got into a situation, most of the time, you know, I can use my thoughts and really get me out of those situations. I mean, there's been times that I'm like, okay, you know, this is where I'm probably going to have to call 911, but we've worked it out. And to know that he, you know, was out there and going out there every day and searching and not knowing. I mean, it's, you know, we are looking, talking about our senses. You know, normally we go out to the beach and we don't think twice. You know, we hear every day about people drowning and people losing their lives, not only at the beach, but, I mean, everything in general. People do it on horses. You know, I don't hear it every day, but I've heard tragic stories. And I still get on my horse and I don't think about it, you know. And so going out there that week looking for him, you know, it really opened up more senses, and then it made me realize, man, you know, life is considerably short, you know, and we do, and I tend to do it too, like I take every day for granted, you know. So I wake up a little bit more now with a little bit more gratitude and a little bit more, you know, I'm blessed for this and thank you for giving me one more life or one more day, you know. And so I just want to give a shout out to the amount of people that was involved. You know, Pete was from a small town. I grew up with him right here in Milton, Florida, which, you know, to me is small. It's not the smallest town in the world, but it's small. And to know that the whole community just came together, and we're still coming together. I mean, we have a fish tournament benefit for him coming up April 15th. If anybody's interested, just let me know so I can get the information on that. We also are going to do a field trial hunt, which is at Coldwater, and that's going to be another benefit for him. I'm going to bring the horses out and allow the kids to ride around in the round pen, and I've donated a couple of things towards that field trial benefit to raise money for his family. Captain Paul Redman was the gentleman that actually found him, and I don't know too much about him, but I know that he has had to deal with some of the same exact traumas of going out there in those waters and finding people. But he actually thought of the idea of creating a reef for him. So there is going to be a Pete's Reef there in the channel where he was found. So that has been donated. And then we have our Southern Raceway here in Milton. Several of the guys that's been winning these past weekends have been donating all the money to Pete's family. So it's just, it was such a tragedy going through that week, and as an empath, you know, holding everybody else's energy was really hard for me. But I was going out there and getting closer and reminding myself I need to stay grounded and looking for those spirit animals and looking for the signs above for that guidance of, okay, there was closure and there's peace there. And so I did write a tribute, which I think you've seen it on Facebook, talking about that and kind of explaining through, which I didn't talk about it until after we found the news, but it was so crazy Saturday when he was found. Saturday or Friday night, we had went out there Friday. Our plans was to go back out there Saturday and just walk the beach. looking for whatever sign we needed, you know, and to be there to support the family. And there was boaters, your friend Gene, I want to give a shout out to him. I do believe he flown 2 days in his seaplane looking over. We had the Cajun Navy that came out. We had Daphne Search and Rescue that came out, the Coast Guard. I mean, you name it, people were out there. And it was
We can mention
it was incredible.
Gene Valentino. So he's a friend of mine, and he's actually known in the community here a whole lot. But, yeah, he had his own plane. He was out there flying. Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, you know,
Cajun Navy, I've heard about them, too.
Cajun
had,
Navy.
That's a great group of people.
It was amazing to see and to see that closure. But that night before he was found, you know, I had multiple dreams of that he was found. And I woke up and I told my husband and I said, I could not stop dreaming that he was found. So we, as soon as we got to Fort Pickens and I turned off my truck, our phones dinged saying that he was found. So it was incredible to know how close you can get to your senses and your subconscious telling you what you need to know. And I've had a couple of those dreams where things like that have happened. It was more of just a shout out of what has happened in the past 2 weeks with him. And like I told people through that message, you know, Pete's going to live lifetime after lifetime, you know, from generation to generation, he's going to be remembered because he was such a great, he impacted everybody that he met. And he was one of those people that he would give the shirt off your back or his back to. So, you know, and he did raise 2 children, and they're going to keep him alive, you know, and that's what we have to think about, you know, is he's going to be a part of us for the rest of our life, physically not here, which is hurtful, but he's going to live on.
Yeah, it's interesting that as long as somebody remembers you, then, you know, whatever impact you had, you know, it's still going to be felt. You know, that's why I talked about one of my favorite folks on the show, Dr. Peter Pry, who I think died of a COVID shot. And this is last August, and I still talk about him. I still quote him. I still got the bills that he wrote. I compiled every show that he did with us over the course of 4 years. You know, I've made that available to a couple of folks, and still hoping that, you know, like the Center for Security Policy and other folks get back to me and say, hey, yeah, you know, because I have an entire library. I've tried to get to his family, you know, same kind of thing. So for those that don't know the story, and like I say, as always, the caution is you can reveal or talk about as much as you want. Don't feel pressured to go into any more detail than you want to. But if you want to, you know, mention his name, and as far as, you know, you want to talk about what happened, and then let's talk about, you know, the water and the area around here a little bit. And then again, Josh, just hang on. I will get to you, I promise. Can you tell us a bit more of the story so that those that don't know can kind of fill in some details?
There was multiple stories that kind of went out, but gist of it, you know, he did what he always did. Like me, always going out there riding horses. You know, it was just a typical other night for him. He was going to go out there and go floundering there in the pass. So
he was in a boat, or was he, you know, on the shoreline, or swimming? Where was he?
He was, I think, like a little 14-foot boat. But again, it was a boat that he always went out there on. But it was the pass, so I think I'm not super familiar with the beach area either, but I know that he was right there in the past, close to like Joe Patty's, going out towards like the Coast Guard area, and across.
So this is close to shore, Pensacola. Just if people want to look this up on a map, try and find out what we're talking about here.
I'm right there in Pensacola, and it was cold that night. It was windy, and something happened with the boat, and the waves capsized in, and there was one other person on the boat with him that did make it ashore, but I, as far as I know, you know, it was just a freak accident, and just like most of the drownings out there, it happens so quick. Even the best swimmer can get caught up in it, especially if the tide's going out. So,
rip currents. People that are familiar with rip currents, you know, can be devastating.
Yeah, the rip currents. It was one of the coldest nights that we had. So I think it was in the 30s that night. So I can only imagine.
Yeah, hypothermia possibilities too, you know, once you're in the water.
Well, that's really just the story of behind it, that he was missing for four or five days before they found him.
Wow. Now, this particular stretch of water has had other people that have had problems or tragedies.
Mm-hmm.
So what you and I need to do once, you know, you let this kind of go a little bit over time, we need to take a look at that stretch of water. And we need to get some oceanographer folks or some people or some boaters and get together and see if we can figure out what's going on there. Maybe there are, maybe there's like a warning time when people shouldn't be there. Maybe there's something we can do. Mm-hmm. You know, like my guest, you know, coming up in a couple hours from now, I look for trends. I look for patterns. I look for, you know, things that that people aren't noticing. You sort of put the events together in your head. And as far as what you do riding horses and what I used to do as a flight instructor that I intend to do again, I've lost friends who were flight instructors, and I would teach the next day because that's what I did. It's, you know, and I always separate, you know, I know things can happen. I was involved in the several, you know, possible mid-air collisions simply because it's crowded up there sometimes. And other pilots get distracted and they do stupid things, you know. And of course, when you're teaching a lesson too, you got to be aware of what's happening around. I think I was generally pretty good at that because I'm still here. But for other folks, but it never stopped me. I never questioned flying, despite the fact that some pretty horrible things happen. It's like Mark Twain wrote a book on the dangers of staying in bed, and what he said was that most people die in bed. You know, so you might as well have the adventures, take the train trips. And life was a lot more dangerous then. You know, the boats weren't as safe. The boilers would explode. The river boats. He's like, go ahead, travel. So much safer than staying in bed. That's where most people die in bed. So when you look at it that way, it's like, oh, okay. You know, you might as well, you know, would I miss the chance, you know, to go to Paris with my daughter and climb the Eiffel Tower simply because I thought at some point, somewhere along the way, an airliner might have a problem. No, I'm going to go. You know, so that's why we do what we do. You know, why do people live at the base of volcanoes? Well, because it's the best soil in the world. You know, why did I live in San Francisco for 30 years on an earthquake fault? And I was in the earthquake of 89 because it was beautiful. You know, so why do we do the things we do? Because that's the human condition. So you can live your life, you know, worried about what might happen, or you can revel in the good things that do happen. Personally, I would rather fly and experience that than miss that for something that might happen maybe, or most likely won't happen because the odds are against it, but things do happen to certain people. It's like lightning. You know, are you going to miss watching a storm because you might be hit by lightning? I don't watch the storm, you know, because it's there. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It's amazing. Anyway, that's just my thought. Let me bring on, do you have like a follow-up comment, and then I'll bring Josh on here.
No, like I said, I just wanted to definitely bring a shout out to everybody that was involved and that's still involved. And just make it easier for the family itself, you know. I took a lot from it as well, you know. Again, just going back to, okay, I'm keeping myself grounded.
Mm-hmm.
Let me trust the universe, and it all came out like it was supposed to, you know. So in one hand, yes, it's a tragedy because we lost somebody that we'll never get to say hey to again. In a physical world, but in another hand, you know, it was beautiful in its own way because then people come together and you just see what love really brings to the table, you know. And I'm sure even the family was like, oh my God, you know, we didn't realize so many people were going to be involved with this. So there, in every tragedy, we can make it beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, we lost people in the San Francisco earthquake, but we also got to meet all our neighbors for the first time. You know, we had a cookout that night, you know, because everybody brought their perishable food because the power was out. And so we immediately, you know, got ourselves organized, and our local corner grocer brought out the charcoal and the lighter fluid. And we had a banquet. You know, it's pitch black, right? There's no electricity, no lights, and nothing. And the police are chasing looters down the street. And there's some pretty horrible things going on. But in our corner, we're like, hey, this is cool, man. We're like San Francisco. We're going to, like, chill out and, like, totally awesome experience. We're going to have some California food and barbecue. I'm like, this is great. And, oh, look, there's the police running up the hill. That's awesome, too. You know, this San Francisco, what are you going to do, right? Anyway, let's bring on Josh.
Right.
Make his line live. And so we had a little background noise. I made it live a second ago. Josh. You're on with Cowgirl Candace and the rest of it. And we got Marco in the Netherlands listening in, and he's working hard on his computer stuff, and we do what we do. Good morning, sir.
Hey, Greg, how you doing, bud?
I think I just told you. No, don't have to tease me.
God.
Everybody starts.
How dare I?
No, it's not you. I think I should wait until people say, how you doing? And then go into my spiel. No, anyway, so I'm doing fine. How you doing? It's like New Jersey. How you doing? Yeah, we'll get some coffee. We'll talk. Yeah, how you doing?
No, I'm from Chicago. We're over here doing the pizza thing, you know? Anyway.
Yeah, you got a new mayor who's Candace, like worse than the old mayor. I know that.
Oh, my God. Why would you do that to me? No, it's going to be...
Because you called from Illinois. Well, actually, just to let you know, I don't think you've talked to Candace before too, but this is we're sort of like horses in life and nature and whatever else comes to mind. I mean, you're not stuck on those subjects.
Oh no, I was gonna ask her something.
Sure, go ahead.
Candace, I'm about to deliver a bunch of water and diapers to the church to send down to Southern Illinois with. It's a whole thing with tornadoes that just ripped through here and kind of destroyed a bunch of our towns.
Oh man!
But when I go to my church, we have perpetual prayer. Is it okay with you if I put Peter's name in there for them to pray for him?
Oh my gosh! Yep. So his real name was Marvin, but he went by Pete. But it was Marvin Leslie Griffin was his name.
Marvin. Okay, that's all I need. No, I just I appreciate that.
Yeah.
No, I just wanted to ask you, you know, because that matters. okay. Greg, my friend, how you doing,
mm-hmm. don't set me up like that. No, I'm actually curious about what's going on. Tell me about Illinois, because I know about the tornadoes. I was seeing on the news, but watching on the news and knowing someone that actually knows people and knows what's going on is a different thing. So what happened? What happened with the tornadoes?
That was mostly torn up the south side of our state.
Mm-hmm.
Tore up a couple towns. Dude, it really tore up Mississippi and Alabama. Like,
mm-hmm.
We should be focusing our attention down there.
Well, that's close to our neighborhood down here. But, Candace, do you know more about
that?
Do you know about more of that tornado?
Well, I was the one, Alabama and Mississippi. So was that the same line of storms that hit y'all as well?
Yeah, I know. That's the beauty of it is I'm not a meteorologist. I don't know. I just know that a bunch of towns were torn up and a bunch of people are devastated. Like, there were dozens of deaths.
Yeah. I know.
I can't remember
Mississippi, but I know that my dad called me the day that it happened and was like, have you seen what Mississippi looks like? Because I got quite a few friends in Mississippi. So my immediate thought was, oh, my God, let me message them because I can't remember the name of it, but it was my good friend. And he said, you know, he could feel the impact, but I mean, it was like 18 wheelers on top of houses. Like, that's how bad it was.
Wow.
Greg, for you that hasn't really followed up with it, I mean, I didn't know about the line of tornadoes in Illinois. I did, like I said, I knew about the ones in Mississippi because my dad called me on it. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's, I don't know if maybe I'm getting older, so I hear more because social media is there to give us news, even if it's false or untrue. But to me, I feel like the tornadoes just in the United States in general has been more than what they used to be. I don't know. How do y'all feel about that?
Well, just the fact that
you
at your age have said for the second time says you're feeling older is cracking me up, you know, as I approach 64. You know,
Greg over there being the crib keeper.
But what's interesting is I know the global warming climate change crowd like to focus and they said that it's been when they'll say it's been the hottest year in 100 years, it's still within the margin of statistical, you know, we're not really sure what happened. They'll take like a 0.1% increase and go, it's the hottest year. You know, in other words, they're barely into the gray zone and they're reporting this stuff. So are tornadoes better or worse or I shouldn't say better or worse, but more frequent? Probably not. I mean, there are cycles like everything else. Hurricanes run in cycles. You know, the warmest times, it's kind of ironic, the warmest times of the last 100 years or so were the 1930s, and we had the worldwide depression. We had the rise of the worst dictators probably in world history, you know, Hitler, Stalin, Mao, you know, some of these other folks that came about. And it was a very warm time. Warm Times have also produced incredible genius, the Renaissance, you know, great agricultural times, you know, all kinds of food and things. So it's interesting how it works. But as far as more or less, just go back to the almanac, like the old Farmer's Almanac or any of the almanacs, and just, you know, check the numbers of tornadoes per year. But here's something to think about, too, is that as the country gets bigger and develops more, tornadoes are going to have more effect, because when you have more population, you know, more people are hit by them. You know, when you have 100 years ago, you didn't have as many people scattered around the country. And so you could have even stronger storms that might be at a complete rural or not even a populated area at all. So it's just, you got to take a look at the evidence. You know, everything changes. You cannot legislate climate change. You know, shutting off your SUV is not going to lower the temperature, and lowering the temperature actually isn't that good an idea anyway. Let me get Marco. He's got a comment here. He says, a climate activist, it's warm weather. He says, that's climate change. It's cold weather. That's climate change. Yeah. Warm weather. That's climate change. Cold weather. That's climate change. Normal temperature. That's climate change. You know, it storms. That's climate change. It doesn't storm. That's climate change. So I think Marco's pretty much nailed it. Whatever they want, they'll use, you know,
if anybody forgot the Greta Thunberg quote, I'm offended.
Oh, what does dear Greta the spoiled brat say today?
I'm offended.
She says she's offended? You know, who's the Australian comedian? There's an Australian comedian. I should put that on my social media page. You know, he was talking about being offended. He says, someone says, I'm offended. And he says, yeah, so? What? The world doesn't stop turning. It doesn't matter. I don't care if you're offended. I'm offended, you're offended. You know, what do you want?
That's
you want
a Brit.
You change.
That's a Brit.
You
know, That's not Australian. That's a Brit.
He's a British guy? But
yeah,
he talks with an Australian accent. Explain that one.
Hair.
Yeah, that's the guy. You sure he's not Australian?
You know what? I would love to explain a British accent or an Australian accent.
Perhaps we could talk in a British accent. If for a chance, I should actually try one. Or Australian accent. Good eye. How's it going?
Maybe. You know what? I think that's
maybe
not going to work
accent.
Out too well.
We speak in Russian accent sometimes. You know, you never know what happened here. It's action radio.
You know what joke is. You know what joke is.
Yeah. We're definitely all over the place this morning. This is kind of fun. We're going to get serious in the third hour. And then we got CJ with our wellness in the second hour, which is going to be interesting too. Have you, either of you or anybody in the line, like I said, we still got Jude in the line too, with what's going on with the stuff that Ed Dowd's come out with? You know, his book is Cause Unknown, Sudden Deaths. You know, and what I find fascinating, and this is one of the questions I have for him later on, is the fact that with all the medical knowledge and the medical journalists, you know, the New England Journal of Medicine, The Lancet, you know, the supposed, you know, great publications, they're like the equivalent of the New York Times, at least what they used to be, as far as medical journalism. They didn't notice this. Nobody noticed this. We knew something was coming, because at Action Radio, we've been complaining about the whole Dr. Fascist program, you know, ever since he started back in February of 2020. But we didn't know how it was going to come up, but we knew something really bad was going to happen, and that man had to be stopped. Anyway, what I find so fascinating, and I'm curious your reaction to this too, it was the morticians and the life insurance people that first made the big alert that the jabs, the non-vaccines, were causing massive problems and that people were dying. You know, it's not a pandemic of the non-vaccinated. It was actually a pandemic of the vaccinated, you know, that are in far worse shape. I don't know if you guys have friends you want to talk about or your own personal experience with this. I mean, feel free. But why the insurance companies and the morticians, why are they the ones that were the whistleblowers? I just find that fascinating. Any reactions? Let's start with Candace.
I mean, have not heard of that, but I mean, you kind of understand where I'm at, and it's cool that I'm on Action Radio because I'm getting a little bit more involved with with dipping into something that I've just like, you know, the evil in the world and the life insurance and all that. I could see why, you know, they.
Well, you're getting older, so you know you got to deal with these things.
Yeah, you know, I'm getting older, so I'm like, maybe I should listen to this a little bit more. No, but you know, it's always been in the back of my head that I'm like, yeah, you know, kind of like Judy said, what they say, just think the opposite, you know. So, and that's exactly how I feel, because I'm like, you know, there's greed, and they're not out to really help you. I mean, they're here to find ways to make money, and unfortunately, it's involving us, and it's population control and things that, you know, that I don't know the no's about. So I don't have a lot of comments on it other than I don't agree with how the government and how the pharmaceutical companies do what they do for us. So
Well, I think we talked about this a little bit before. How are they affecting your horses? I mean, do you have to have life insurance on your horses, yeah, or is that an idea? Or do you have certain pharmaceuticals they're trying to push on you? I know that, in fact, we talked about this last week with Judy, the fact that they said ivermectin was horse paste, and you're actually a horse person, you know, who uses ivermectin, you know. And so it's yeah, interesting, the sort of the crossovers between, you know, how the horses are taken care of, which are mammals just like us. I mean, we're not that different biologically.
Right.
They're just a lot bigger, you know,
yeah,
and they don't have thumbs, which right, makes their life a little tougher. But, you know, other than that, we're not that different. So I'm just
right,
curious,
yeah,
what's Big Pharma doing to you?
So, and this goes back to when I was a practice manager in the vet world too. I worked in the vet field for 11 years. And it's the same thing, you know, they come out with these new products and they push it on you. So like, you know, penicillin, we used to be able to get over the counter for the horses, and now we have to actually take them in. And half the time you don't even hear penicillin being used at all in the vet field, as much as they used to, because there is more of the big pharmaceutical companies out there that have different antibiotics. And similar to us going to the doctor, you know, they kind of narrow down, oh, well, you either have a fungus or a bacteria. Well, here, let me just give you the all spectrum antibiotic. And then our body gets immune to it. So it's the same thing with the horses. It's just, they push certain drugs and they make it harder to get the things that were, you know, was designed, you know, for us to use. So I still try to keep at least two bottles of penicillin, because one, it doesn't really expire. So mm-hmm, I know a couple years ago when COVID came out, you could not get ivermectin and you could not get penicillin. It took me months. And when I finally did get it, the distributor I got it from said that it was on back order for 8 months. So I was like, okay, well then give me two, you know? So it's been difficult for me as a horse person and a dog person, you know, because again, you know, growing up, you know, the thing was, hey, for heartworms, give your dogs ivermectin. And then when I got into the vet field, they were like, oh no, that's bad, you can't do that. But here, let me rescue a dog that has heartworms, and now we're going to treat it with doxy and ivermectin. You know, there were so many contradictions, you know, or, oh, Advantage Multi is not used to treat heartworms, but yet, you know, some of the older vets would prescribe that for a slow kill treatment. So there were so many, okay, well, you said this, but now you're allowing this. So it was hard to figure out what to believe and what not to believe. And a lot of these new flea and heartworm medications cause seizures and cause cancer, and all these, they're able to sell it for more, so they're going to keep doing that. Versus, you know, hey, you can treat them with ivermectin, and here's your holistic ways of treating for fleas and ticks. So, you know, it's definitely impacted the world of animals. And I think the last time I was up to date with it, one of the friends that still works at the vet clinic and is a good friend of mine, you know, she was like, Candace, just for a intestinal parasite screen, which is something super quick, super easy to do. You literally just take a fecal sample and you stick it under a microscope. They're charging like $80. And I'm like, there is no way.
You get your own microscope for that.
You know, especially as a practice manager, I'm like, yeah, but I used to get it at this cost, or like, this is how much time it takes. So it's just, it's crazy to think about. How much, I think I got quoted this year, now that I'm not working in the vet field and I don't have any discounts, just to get traveler, like let's just say I took my dog in and I wanted to do just the basic full workup because he is active. So that would be just, you know, just the pre-health screen of blood work, mm-hmm, his vaccines, if I was going to do those vaccines, and then just some x-rays on his shoulders. It was going to be $1,100. And I'm thinking, that's not even 4, 6 to 12 months of flea and heartworm medication. You know, that would be an additional $600. So, for, you know, is this really what we need to do for our animals? And we already talked about how people don't bring their animals into the vet when they need help. Well, I don't have $1,600 laying around for their annuals if for what they require us to do nowadays. So mm-hmm, it's just making it impossible. And there is insurance is out there, but a lot of it is more hassle, same with our insurance, than it is. It's just it's a way for them to make money. You know, here, let me charge you $80 a month, but before you take that dog in, you have to call us first and wait on the line and get our approval, and then we're probably going to look through your charts and figure out a way to not even accept it, and then you're still stuck with the bill. So I don't personally have insurance on my animals because I've seen it happen too many times where they go in to use it, and that insurance company's like, nah, we're not going to do it. So basically you're paying all this money each month. And
they'll deny you anyway? Great.
So,
wow, okay.
So that's my thoughts on that.
Yeah. Well, let me ask Josh, in the post, you know, COVID world, what they're trying to engineer of this new normal, are they changing the way they do emergency relief up there? Are they running around with COVID vaccines for all the tornado victims, for example? Are you seeing any changes from ways that emergencies like this were handled previously? I'm just curious.
I like how you took that into a very dark place, my friend. No,
Welcome
not
to Action
really
Radio's Dark Side. No, sorry. Hey, want to hear Dark? I'll play you Dark. I don't think I played this for Candace for a while too.
Please go dark.
Well, I made a prediction before the 2020 election of what would happen, and I never thought that Brandon would be elected because, you know, how do you take some moron who was never popular at his best, you know, to beat the most popular president, you know, probably ever, you know? So I made this before the election.
Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
Yeah, that's pretty messed up.
Well, that's what we do around here, yeah. So back up in liberal land. Now, actually, I don't know if folks know Illinois. I don't know it that well, but I do know you've got – people think of, like, Chicago is it. But you've got a big agricultural base down south. There's a lot of, I guess, wheat and corn and other things that are grown in Illinois. Isn't agriculture your major state product?
You do realize that 96% of the entire state of Illinois, when it comes to agriculture, is family-owned.
I didn't know that, but this is why I ask you these questions. That's good. So,
yeah, I know.
Is Archer Daniels Midland trying to buy, you know, all of that up, or what's going on? How are the family farms doing?
I don't know. I own like 300 acres of it. I'm not worried. I can't save the rest of the state.
That's a pretty substantial amount. What do you do with your 300 acres? That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm actually profiting a little bit.
Good.
I don't know.
Come on, Josh, you
need
to focus in here. Come on, focus in now.
No, hold on. No, we're doing teamwork right now.
Okay.
The state of Illinois is based entirely off of the city of Chicago influencing the city of Springfield, which is the capital.
Right.
Nothing is going to get done until Chicago is shut down. We can easily sell them to Indiana or Wisconsin.
What, Chicago?
Yeah, well, Chicago. Yeah, we can sell them. We could even sell them as a satellite to Michigan because apparently they love that Uber stuff.
Well, let me ask you a question then. Now that, you know, I mean, I love to take the absurd and actually, you know, make a point out of it. I wrote an article back in 2014 about city-states, where the big cities like Chicago or in California, where I wrote the article, you know, if you take Sacramento, San Francisco, San Diego, and Los Angeles, and you actually isolate them as a city-state within the state of California. So you'd have the state of California, and you'd have these city-states. These city-states would be self-funding, self-governing, self-destroying. Their transportation, their welfare, their education would all be funded within the city-state, and they'd leave the rest of the state alone. As far as congressional representation, the city-states would have their own congressional districts, you know, however many there were, and the rural areas would have their own. You'd have two senators per state, one representing, you know, the city states and one representing all the rural areas. So in California, you know, the city states don't take up a lot of area, but they have most of the population. So by isolating the city states in Chicago, so if you can just imagine this, so Chicago would be isolated. It would be in the state of Illinois, but it'd be pretty much cut off from Illinois. That you cross this border, this imaginary, you know, city limit border, where once you were in there, you'd be subject to their laws, their taxes. You still have the Constitution, but you know, all the illegal gun control and all the illegal other stuff. But just the cost.
You already know why that won't work.
Well, I didn't say it was going to work. I just thought it was an interesting idea. Well, tell me why it won't work.
Okay, it's not going to work because the city of Chicago itself would fight to remain a part of the populace of Illinois. And the city of San Francisco and the city of L.A. and the city of New York and the city of Camden and the city of all these other freaking places, dude, you already know they're going to fight to remain members of the state that they're in.
Well, no, they would
Washington,
be within the state. I'm just saying that
joke.
They would be – I would just say they'd be self-governing and self-taxing. That everything else – I mean, they'd still be part of their state and part of the country and part of everything else. The difference would be that, like in San Francisco, they tax people way up in Redding for San Francisco's public transit system, even though people in Redding, unless they go to San Francisco, aren't going to use it. Well, that's not fair. So why should the cities draw from the entire rest of the state to fund them? People in the cities don't realize the only reason the cities exist is because the rest of the state trucks in stuff, grows their food, takes care of them, you know, creates the income, and does all the things that allow these cities to operate. And the cities, in return, contemptuously, you know, take all that money and tell the rest of the state that they're actually creating a benefit when they're really a cost. That's what I'm getting at.
Right, Greg, your problem with your logic when it comes to this stuff is that you're trying to be logical.
Of course.
That's
See,
not
you
how
gotta
we
understand,
operate.
I don't look at things about who's against it or whether it'll work or not. That's not my concern.
No.
My concern
I appreciate what you're saying entirely. You are logical in your findings. Yes, mm-hmm. I appreciate that very much. That's mm-hmm. not how the states operate. The city
oh, I know,
of Chicago.
But I'm not here to talk about what is. I'm here to talk about what can be. That's the whole purpose of the show.
Oh, Narnia.
So
I don't worry
about what is. So if you're going to deal only with what is and say that this is the only thing that can be, then obviously, you know, we're going to disagree on this here. And I don't mean the bad way. I just mean we're just going to disagree, which is fine. I mean, I love disagreement. But what I'm saying is I'm trying to look at things in terms of what can be, what should be, what could be, you know, with a little bit of change of attitude. So it's the attitude that has to change. When people say you can't pass, you know, vaccine product liability, you know, Congress will never go for that. And I'm saying, well, what if we don't give them the option? What if the opposition is so great to Big Pharma that the population demands that they pass it? So there's two ways of looking at things. You know, it's like we were talking about earlier with Candace. Who's the crazy person? The person that goes to the job they can't stand, retires and dies, or the person that rides horses in the rain? To me, it's a no-brainer. Candace, what do you think?
Yeah.
You brought Candace on this. How you doing, Candace?
Well, it's her report. I'm just kind of hanging here. So, you know, she gets an hour a week.
I always like to challenge when people say, oh, you can't do it, you know, but I'm also a dream chaser too. So, you know, like for instance, you know, my friends were over the other day and we were talking about rodeos and I went out and rode the mechanical bull at Wild Greg's the other day and tried my hand at line dancing since I haven't done that in 4 years. And now I have the brilliant idea of, you know, when I was younger, I really wanted to actually get on a bull, you know, and ride. And so I told my friends and some clients the other day, I said, y'all are going to hate me, but I think I'm going to actually do that. Like, I think I'm going to find a...
Why not?
There's a branch out here in Holt that apparently allows people to do it. And I'm like, why not? I live life once, you know. I want to say, hey, yeah, I got in that chute and I rode the bull. Not a mechanical bull, like a real life bull. You know, I want to see. And then
you don't have to ask, right? Do you have training bulls? Do you have training bulls? Do you work your way up? I mean, how do you do this?
Well, obviously, Greg, I'm not that stoic to get on the biggest bull of all.
Well, I'm just curious.
The name for myself. So I'm probably going to try to start small, you know, like the smaller size versus full-size bulls. And then they do have and I don't know a lot about the clinics. I'm researching that now, but
right.
There's one in Texas I thought about doing next year, and I figured if anything, it's just going to make me a better rider, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So next year I'll do the Ranch Brock Clinic, and looking at that, they start you on mechanical bulls or mechanical machines first, and then you go to by the end of the clinic, you're on a real life bronc course and doing it. So we'll see how it goes, you know, but we only get to live life once, and you know, I'm going to continue to be the person that runs in the rain or does the opposite of what the people that think they're normal do. So
yeah, most people don't regret what they do, they regret what they didn't do. So
correct.
And as one who has, you know, flown in, done aerobatics and biplanes that were open cockpit and seen the world upside down hanging by shoulder straps, I can tell you it's real fun. You know, and I'd rather do that than not do that. And if I fell out, I just pull the ripcord. You know, I mean, there's a problem. Pilot said, okay, we're dumping out of here. All right, well, I don't really want to, but given the other choice, let's go. So you always want to err on the side of let's do rather than let's not do. But the bull riding sounds interesting. How'd you do on the mechanical bull?
I think I did good. My friends were like, everybody else gets slung off, and you're just like, I'm bored with it, and I step off. So,
Well, Kristen, can ride horses so long.
I stepped off both times. You know, the guy looked at me and told me to get back on there. So I got back on there, rode it for about 45 seconds, and stepped off again. I was like, okay, there's my 8 seconds.
did he max it out? Did they max out the controls?
No. They took it pretty easy on me. I mean, I it's been years since I've been on a mechanical bull, but I feel like looking back at the video that my friend took, I was like, they could have done harder on me than that, you know, but
you got to request the e-ride.
You know, it was out of bar, so I'm sure that they have to keep it easy for, you know, the people that get on. And I was a little tipsy, too. I think I haven't drank in a while. That fireball caught up to me. So, you know, it is what it is. I was like, okay, we'll see if we can do this tipsy or not. So I still came off without hitting the ground. So that makes me happy.
That's good. I rode a mechanical
bull. I'm still out there smiling, laughing at myself. So that's
I rode one once, and I made the
handle
mistake
that
of,
like
have,
a gentleman.
Go ahead, Josh, and then I'll get my story. I want to hear Josh.
I just said handle. Go ahead. I was just saying handle that like a gentlewoman.
Exactly. Yeah, my claim to fame was I got thrown off fairly early when I did it, but I made the mistake of riding a jet ski when jet skis first came out. And the thing, you know, we stood on it and I fell off and I got on. I was exhausted, right? But the vibration, all my leg muscles had vibrated so much from this jet ski that had no strength left. And then they said, let's all, you know, it was like we're down, I think a spring break, right? So we're doing all the crazy things at that time. And then I hopped on this bull and I got thrown off. And the guy said, you're a wimp. I said, how do I explain? No, I've just been riding a jet ski. I don't have any leg muscles left. You know, you can't do that because, you know, it's a dude thing, right? So they laughed at me anyways. Okay, fine. So I have to get back on when I have not been on a jet ski and actually I'll try this. But I love challenges like that. You know, in fact, we have our stand your ground gun range here in Milton I just got my archery stuff back out and, you know, cleaned up and my new arrow rest. And so I'll be doing some archery and they have axe throwing and all these kind of cool things. You got to try everything, you know, and don't let your age limit you either, you know. And we've got a couple minutes left. Josh, any good stories of things you've tried or want to try now that we're pushing the boundaries here?
I tried a crossbow like 2 months ago.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Well, that sounds good.
High PSI. It was actually pretty sweet.
Yeah. So
no.
The thing with
other than that, no.
I tried a crossbow. The first time I shot a crossbow was 2 years ago, and then this year I do hunt. And this year, it was cool shooting it, but not. I've made the decision if I'm going to hunt in bow season, I'm going to use a regular bow or compound bow because the crossbow just goes, the PSI is so high, it's not like a normal shot on a deer. So unfortunately, like, I have to live with that I shot one and it went straight through him and we couldn't find it before dark. So I've learned that crossbow's cool and I'm sure it has its benefits, and I'm not an avid hunter like like a lot of other people, but I personally probably will not use a crossbow ever again as far as hunting goes. Now, just to go out there and shoot, it was sweet, you know, like watching how easy it is. But I wouldn't hunt with it again, I don't think. Not at the 20-30 yard line like you normally do with a regular bow, or maybe I need to learn to shoot not where I was taught to shoot, which was right there on the shoulder. So, and I've heard that from several people too, that has had the opportunity to hunt with them, that it's just not, you got to know where to shoot them. With a crossbow, it's a little bit different than a gun and a regular bow.
Well, crossbows are actually banned in Europe as a cruel and unusual war weapon, you know, back, you know, mm-hmm. 400 or 500 years ago. So crossbows are deadly, incredibly fast, and very powerful and extremely accurate. That's what they were invented for. In fact, yep. Marco said, from the Netherlands, has two crossbows, which is kind of interesting because mm-hmm. you can't have guns there. Marco, we got to talk about doing that. I want to start instituting Second Amendment, you know, campaigns in European countries. That's going to be really good to do. I've got CJ on the line.
You're gonna need to aim behind the left arm. Yeah, hit him in the heart. Okay, I apologize.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We'll have to piece our conversations together here. But the point is, anyway, so I've got CJ. I'm going to just play one thing for a minute here, and we're going to switch over to wellness stuff. But Candace, anything else? Contact information, events coming up. You got the rodeo. We should probably talk about that. I want to get, you know, and especially if you ride a bull, I want videos. I'm kind of curious. I might even do it myself. Yeah. I don't know. You know, who knows?
I mean, another story going back into it that just popped back in my mind, Loretta Lynn's ranch. So I rode out there in 2020. And that was actually the last time that I was on a mechanical bull. And there was probably 15 of us. And, I mean, we're all good. It wasn't like going to the mechanical bull at the fair or at a bar. I mean, we were all actively there riding our horses. So that was pretty cool to watch. But mm-hmm. I do know that my friend, there was two of us. It was, one guy was a bull rider. And that's what he did for a profession. And then there was me. And my friend paid me to get back on because I almost outdid him. So we were going back and forth and talking about your legs after that jet ski, after that second time on that bull. Let me tell you, I was like, okay, like I could not do this back to back to back. So, but fun memory that kind of just popped up. But as far as I will not be entering no rodeo, it'll just be a practice pin if I do it there in Holt, but I'll be sure to send videos once that comes to life for me. But I don't have any big events coming up. I will continue doing my trail rides up until the very end of May. Times might change. I normally, right now, I'm doing them at 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., but I'm probably going to do them earlier in the morning or later in the evening as it starts getting hotter. And then I will not be doing trail rides from June to August. So my season for trail rides will end the end of May, and they will not open back up until the beginning of September. So if people want to trail ride with me, they need to let me know. And again, my information is Believe the Journey Horse Services. You can find me on Facebook. You can look me up on social media as far as TikTok and Instagram under Cowgirl Candace. And my phone number is 850-293-9261. And I also have a website that you can look up, Believe the Journey, or you can look up horse rides in Milton, and I think I'm the first person that pops up.
Hmm. The only thing about a phone number is if you get a call from like Azerbaijan or Sri Lanka or Cuba or any of the places that we're heard in the world, don't be surprised. You know, just to let you know about that.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna play. You're all welcome to stick around. Josh, you're welcome to stay. Candace, you're welcome to stay. But if you have to go, I understand. And just, you know, leave it in. It's like a Zoom call. Just kind of take off at any time. I'm going to play this just so we're – let folks know what we do here, and then I'm going to come back with CJ, and we're going to talk about wellness.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news!
every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
Okay, so I got CJ on the line. We're going to talk wellness. Josh, I'm just going to mute you for a little bit and see how our conversation goes and bring you back in. And Judy's still on the line. And then, of course, the top of the next hour, things are going to get really exciting around here. Not that they're not exciting with CJ, but they're going to get really exciting. We've got Ed Dowd, who is one of those amazing people, nationally known, internationally known, folks, for his book. I keep forgetting. I should actually really memorize this, but I keep forgetting the name of it. Cause Unknown. There we go. It's his book talking about the epidemic of sudden deaths, you know, in 20 and 21. So, CJ, how you doing?
Hi, good morning. Good morning. I caught a little bit of the end of your show about a cross show or something. I caught like the last, like 1 minute of the show.
Yeah, you can't do that. This is why I don't always bring people. I used to bring people on. It's like, what do you think of that? I'm like, I just got here. You know, anyway, so I'm getting better about that. But, yeah, so you never know what we're going to talk about here. You know, so Candace has Believe the Journey horse services. She's at the horse ranch and does trail rides. And, of course, I'll be joining her on that probably, if not by May, certainly in the fall. More likely in the fall, though, just because I'm like, really busy these days with the show. Let's tell your story a little bit. So what you're working on, what you're doing, what's your wellness specialty? And then we can talk about anything you want to talk about.
Well, one of the things I was thinking that we could talk about as far as wellness goes, just because it seems like I've had this conversation recently here multiple mm-hmm. times this week, is our morning coffee. As I'm sipping on it as we are talking, but this was not the first thing that I had this morning. So I think maybe there's some things around, you know, first morning routines, you know, that we can touch on briefly. And then I know it's Easter week. And I think that there's, you know, focusing on a lot of things right now, as you've already had on your show, that we can be grateful for during this Easter season and what we can look forward to over the next couple of days. I think it's really important, not just, you know, what we're putting into our mouths, our physical, you know, body, but a lot of our emotional and mental state has all to do with the way our body responds. As well. And I know when we're in such a trying season and this whole week that's been a debacle, sometimes, you know, and I'm right there with everybody. I'm no exception to the rule. I think, you know, making sure our mental and emotional state and what we're reading and what we're feeding into ourselves, you know, is something that's going to help us and not hinder us without being naive to what's going on around us, you know, or being in denial or anything like that. I think it's so important to find a healthy balance, you know, and finding ways to constructively manage the external stimulus stuff that we have no control over, right? Because there's so many things we have control over, and then there's so many things that we do not. So it's a matter of how are we going to manage those? Because managing those affects our physical being.
Yeah, I just see in the news particularly, people, you know, they say, well, I'm disappointed in the news, or I'm stressed out because of the news, all the bad things that are happening. And I'm like, well, why are you watching the news? Well, I have to watch the news. I have to be informed. So there's this strange dichotomy going on here that people feel compelled to watch the news because society says they have to be informed. On the other hand, they don't like what they're hearing because it makes them feel bad. So do you see that kind of stress in people?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm not a news person. However, you know, because of all the different facets of my life that I do on a daily basis, every once in a while I do tune into mainstream media just to be able to put things on Telegram or different, you know, different resources that I have. So I know, okay, what is the reality and what are the lies that the media is feeding us? So, you know, I do tune in every once in a while, but I'm not one of those people where first thing in the morning I get up, turn the TV on, and it's on 24/7 on some baloney that's just feeding us a vision, right, as far as what we want to know. But so that's what I mean. I think we have to have a healthy balance with all the things because that feeds into everything else, you know. And then having a great morning routine that's going to help you get your day started rather than hindering you is very important.
Yeah, I've unmuted Josh because I think this might be a good, you know, like a general discussion that we're going to have here. So feel free to join us a bit here. But morning routines, let's talk about that, because mornings, you know, I don't know what my evening routine is other than playing rock and roll guitar and, you know, getting the show ready and things like that. But mornings are kind of special. And if you upset Josh, your line's a little loud. Let me just mute you again. So we'll just kind of, or you know, there we go. I'll bring you back on in a bit. But if people don't get their morning started, it really screws up their whole day. Whereas if your evening sucks, at least you go to sleep and you can start again the next morning. But coffee, even if you don't like coffee, just but the ritual. And I've heard it said that it's not the coffee or the caffeine necessarily. It's the fact that you're drinking something warm and it kind of warms you up, and, you know, sort of like our old loser days, like sitting on the hot rock, you know, the blood gets going. And so how important are these things? How important is a ritual? How important is drinking something warm?
And,
you know, yeah.
Well, it's very important, but it's not just that. There's a lot more that goes around, because coffee can be actually detrimental, you know, whether it's caffeinated, decaf, you know, whatever. You got to make sure you should be drinking a low-acid coffee or an alkaline coffee or a coffee that does not have, you know, mold and all the toxins and things like that in it.
Mold?
Going to get a Starbucks.
You get moldy coffee? How do you know if you have moldy coffee?
There's tons of stuff that's in the beans. That's just, I mean, we could get into the whole science, but I'd love to go through, like, the morning routine. Your first thing in your mouth should not be coffee in the morning.
What should it be?
And, well, most people have, I keep water by my bed all night long. That's just been something I've grown up with. Some people do, some people don't, but I want to backpedal a little bit.
Sure.
Going into germs and things that you're putting in your mouth, most people don't know that in the morning, before you even take a sip of water, you should be rinsing your mouth out with peroxide or using a tongue scraper or something like that, because you have all the bacteria that builds up in your mouth just when you're sleeping. I mean, that's normal, right? There's nothing abnormal about that. Bacteria builds up in your mouth, on your tongue, while you're sleeping. So if you take a sip of coffee, water, I don't care what you're taking a sip of in the first thing in the morning, you're repurposing that bacteria going back into your body.
So what
you want to do in the morning is you either want to take I like a mouthwash, but I'm not necessarily a proponent of that first, but taking peroxide and just gargling, washing your mouth out, spitting it out, or just taking water, rinsing it around, and still using a tongue scraper. And scraping off all that bad bacteria that's built up in the evening, because then you're not re-swallowing it.
I'm never going to wake up the same. You've ruined my mornings. I'm never going to wake up the same now. I think I have to scrape my tongue. That's not how I expected this conversation to go, CJ.
well, it's bacteria. You know, I start off with, like, most people have coffee, but I'm like, I better backpedal a little bit. You know,
I'm so glad you did. Thank you.
You know, but that's just, And I mean, again, right? How many, what's the percentage of population that probably does that? Probably very little, but it's a good thing to know, because if you know it, you can choose to do it or not do it, right? So if you look at your tongue in the morning before you put anything in your mouth, you know, you 9 times out of 10, you're going to see a film or something on it. I mean, that's just part of the process of what happens when you're sleeping. So think about it. If you take a drink of something, regardless, you're just flushing all that bacteria back down through you. So if you scrape your tongue using a tongue scraper that you can order online, or you rinse your mouth out with a peroxide, or not just a good flavored peppermint, something that tastes good, right? You can do that afterwards. But something that's really going to kill the bacteria on your tongue, and sometimes, depending on the individual person, using just a gargle mouthwash that you go and buy at CVS or the best high-quality gargle mouthwash, it's going to do something. It's better than nothing. But still, taking something and scraping your tongue off, all that nasty film that's in your mouth, that's a big, 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 big plus to do that. You know, people use
Let me ask Josh if he does this, that. Josh, have you ever heard this before? I got your line live now.
No, sir. I've never heard of that before.
Okay. We're breaking new ground here.
Yeah.
We're scraping new ground here.
Let me ask you a really disgusting question.
Can I ask you a disgusting question?
Yeah.
So if we took this bacteria that we've scraped off our tongue and put it in a petri dish, what are we going to find the next day?
Good question. Probably lots of nastiness.
I'm just curious. But isn't our body, evolved to handle that nastiness? Don't our good bacteria attack the bad bacteria? What's that?
Yeah, but
I said no. Ask me.
All right, Josh, go ahead.
Well,
No. You have to have a sense of humor about that. No.
Okay, just curious. All right.
Everything at all times. Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's all it is.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Let me put you back on hold for a little bit here. All right. CJ, so yeah, I'd just be curious. I mean, has anybody done this? Have you done this? I'm just thinking, you know, if this is bad, then why, you know, doesn't the bad bacteria get, killed off by our good bacteria? Don't we have defenses against this?
It depends on your microbiome in your gut. I mean, it should, most people don't have good gut health,
okay.
You know? So again, that just depends. But if you wake up with that film on your tongue in the morning, that's bacteria that has accumulated overnight. So it just makes sense. Why do you want to swallow it? So that's a really good, just a health hygiene tip. That I have used for, you know, quite some time now. And there are different, I mean, sometimes people will just use a toothbrush and, you know, brush off their tongue. That's okay. But if you actually have something that can scrape all that nasty stuff off before you swallow it all back into your digestive tract. I mean, and these are things, like I said, as I give these little tips, these are things that people themselves can look up. You can Google it. You can DuckDuckGo it. You can whatever. And you'll find the benefits. And that's why I said, you know, 9 times out of 10, most people don't do this, right? And so these are just additional little tips that can help you with your hygiene in the morning. And then most people get up and drink their coffee, I would think. First thing in the morning, or they've got the percolator or the Keurig or whatever set, so it's ready for when they come down. Well, you should be having lemon and lime water first thing in the morning, because that really helps to flush out the lymphatic system and the toxins and stuff like that first thing in the morning. It really helps the digestive tract. It really, like, think about when you prime a wall and you paint it. Right? A lot of paint has primer in it. You have to buy the primer first and then you paint. If you do lime water, and you can do lime and lemon, but lime is key because it has a different, it has different components in it than a lemon does, but lemon is good too. So sometimes I'll do both. Sometimes I just do a lime. Is drinking that, you know, 8 ounces of lime water for say, morning, which really helps to prime your body to receive nutrients, to flush out the lymphatic system and get your body ready for the day. So that's why this topic kind of just dawned on me, because when we just started this call is when I had my coffee and I got up at 7 this morning. So I did all my other routine things first before I had my coffee.
Yeah, I actually slept until 5 because I have I started the show an hour later today because we have a guest at the top of the next hour, which I'm very much looking forward to. So that's interesting. Okay, well,
yeah.
So how about Easter? Do you want to talk holiday stress or you had more stuff? Go ahead, continue.
No, I wanted to elaborate a little bit on that, and then we can go into Easter, because all these different things kind of will help you, and then making sure. I mean, all coffee is not created equal. So
that's
you
for
should
sure.
be looking for a clean. I mean, we can do a whole detailed topic on that, you know, at some point or next week or something. But, you know, there are about 2 coffees that I personally recommend to my clients that I know are clean. And you can buy, like, low alkaline coffee, you know, in the Keurig things. I mean, you can look all over the place for them. But that doesn't test for mold factors, that doesn't test for toxins, it just says it's low acid. So for anybody that is super proactive with doing whatever they can do with their health, you know, having a super clean coffee, whether it's caffeinated or not, it's a pretty big deal, especially for avid coffee drinkers. Now, I am a one cup in the morning. Maybe if I'm working at night, I'll have another cup. And because I use coffee that has green tea caffeine, it does not keep me up at night. So the other tip is that all caffeine is not created equal. If you go to get Dunkin' Donuts coffee, that's commercial caffeine, which is really bad. If you drink a Coke, that's commercial caffeine. If you're drinking green tea caffeine, green tea is completely different than commercialized caffeine. So
do they add caffeine? Do they, when you say commercialized caffeine, when you say commercialized caffeine, do these companies actually add? They add caffeine to their products,
yeah.
You know, especially like the energy drinks. I know they add a ton of it. What does that do for them? What does it do for or against us? Adding extra caffeine and, as opposed to the natural caffeine coffee has a bunch of caffeine, but if it's natural, if it grows with the plant, it's different than the extra stuff.
Right.
I mean, why would they do that? Why would they need to add the extra?
Well, think about it. You've got man-made synthetic stuff all the time. You know, it's just like all the sugars, right? That we've had conversations about. So, you know, not all caffeine is bad, but again, if you're getting it from green tea, it's different than man-made synthetic caffeine. So, you know, I think I had mentioned this like one time. I found out that I could not have commercial caffeine the hard way. I went to a wedding like, I want to say 15 years ago maybe, and I thought I was getting a cup of decaffeinated coffee, and it had bean in it. I literally thought I was going to have a heart attack. Like it was so bad. That's how, like really my heart was racing that bad. Like I had a major incident, which I won't get into. And I was like, son of a birch snuckers. I was like, that is the caffeine. And so I realized that I can only have green tea caffeine in the morning. And then, like I said, if I'm working at night, I have my special coffee that I drink, and I can have it at 10 o'clock at night if I'm working on the computer, and it doesn't keep me up. You know, I can then go to bed at midnight and sleep till 7. So going
7 hours?
Wow.
I don't think the last time I slept 7 hours. You know, if I get 6, I'm doing well. Actually, any more than that, I tend to get groggy. I don't like sleeping more than 6, maybe 6.5. But so anything 7 or more, I'm already getting – that actually slows me down, which is kind of interesting.
But, yeah, so I think, you know, setting up your morning routine to get you started the right way in the morning, you know, is key. And we won't go into this topic because we have so much, to talk about. This could lead down so many things, and we can put tables on topics for another time. It's just like you should have an evening routine, right? Oh. Everybody should have an evening routine, which makes it, rather than just watching a movie and falling asleep in the lounge chair, you know, you should have a calming routine before you go to bed, whether that's a 2-minute routine or a 10-minute routine.
Well,
it's
about an hour and a half of loud guitar playing is what I do. And it really relaxes me. I feel quite comfortable after. It's like, yeah, I'm calmed down. I've had my guitar playing.
Well, yeah, whatever works for you,
okay.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but like a healthy a non-healthy or better choice in the evening would be, you know, wanting to fall asleep at 11. So at 10:45, eating 2 slices of pizza and 2 beers, and then falling asleep between 10:45 and 11, right after that's like, really, you want to do that right before you go to bed? You know, now every once in a while, twice a year, if that something like that happens, you know what I'm saying? But it's the general rule of thumb, the 80-20. So having a morning routine that's going to help to wake you up, getting the right vitamins and nutrients, and, you know, starting with the correct hygiene in the morning. Again, just to be as proactive as possible to do these things, it certainly helps. It doesn't hurt. And then making wiser caffeinated choices if you're so inclined to do so, because there's nothing wrong with natural caffeine.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because it's been around for a long time, and we humans adapt to all kinds of things. But what happens to your body when you have food at night? Does it just, like, sit there until morning, or does it get digested overnight, or what does your body do?
Your body works extra hard at night, because I don't know if any of the viewers have ever seen your video, and I'm not promoting my lifestyle on anybody else, because I think you guys have heard it. I'm mostly a vegetarian, but I do eat fish, so I'm not saying one is better than the other. It's all whatever you want to do. But when you eat certain foods, especially late at night, they really just sit in your gut, and it takes a long time for them to go through the digestive process. And since your body does a lot of its repair work at night, you know, that having your body work hard at night while you're sleeping is kind of contradictory to what it's supposed to be rebuilding at night when you're sleeping and repairing itself. So that's why a lot of times you'll hear people say, you know, don't eat 2 or 3 hours before you go to bed. Well, hence most people sit up and watch a movie and eat popcorn and peanuts or, you know, snack all night long. And I've been guilty of that. I mean, I've been guilty of that every once in a while, you know, myself, but I don't make it a habit, you know, and the things that I'm snacking on, I'm like, okay, I'm going to eat some, you know, cut up apple or, you know, I mean, you know, the choices too, but that's just a general rule of thumb that your body is supposed to rest, repair, and heal itself at night when you're sleeping, if you're in that REM sleep. Whereas if you are downloading it with, you know, all the things 2 hours before you go to bed, your body's in work mode and not rest mode.
Okay.
You know, I mean, your body's working when you're asleep, but it's supposed to be in, you know, repair mode, in regenerating mode, not running a marathon. You know what I'm saying? So.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes sense. What I try to do is, you know, in my intermittent fasting, you know, try to be done by noon with food until the next morning, which makes me very hungry at about 9 o'clock at night. It works. I don't know why it works. It works for water. Afternoon, it's just, you know, water. So I understand having a lot with you. Okay. Very cool.
Yeah. So that definitely sets it up. And, you know, taking us into, you know, the Easter routine, I think, well, not even just Easter, but again, with the season and stuff that we are in, is having that devotional time, having that quiet time or prayer time or whatever you do, right? And making sure that you're trying to focus on some of the positive things that we have going on right now rather than all of the negative things. And I know it's hard. I know it's hard because, like I said, I'm no exception to the rule by any means. So I think that's so, so important, though, to think about all the things that we are grateful for. And, I mean, like your radio show, you know what I mean? All the positive things that have come out of the debacle, and even this week that we have had, you know, up to now, you know, finding the silver linings and things and not always looking at the gloom and doom, you know, and especially this week, you know, when we think about what this Easter weekend truly means, you know, if you are a believer and you have faith, it's honing in on those things and that to give a lot of people a lot of reassurance.
Hmm. So how do you see the parallels this week? You know, I think I talked about this
how
with Wendy yesterday. What's that?
Well, yeah, like I said, you guys went over that, and I don't want to.
I was curious your take on it. Well, you don't have to, obviously. I mean, but I'm just curious.
A lot of parallels to the Easter story with what happened with Trump and what is happening. And, you know, depending on which, you know, if you're talking about Israel timeline, if you're talking about how the cabal has kind of changed our timeline with things in the Bible and the way the events took place with Jesus, you know, and Palm Sunday and Good Friday and the resurrection, all the things. I think no matter how you slice it or which day you believe what happened, as far as the details, which is very important, if you take the crux of it, right, the meat and potatoes, bottom line, the way I see it, there are so many parallels with what happened to Trump. You know, when I saw and I'm just thinking so I get it right, I guess when he was going into the courtroom or leaving, you know, he didn't say a word. Remember, they expected him to talk about statements. That was when they supposedly were going to fingerprint him or whatever. And, you know, we don't even know for a fact what they did behind those closed doors. They could have said, hey, we're doing this for office. We're taking you back there. You know, no, there was no mugshot. We don't even know if they did a fingerprint, you know. We don't know what the pantomime was or how real. Like, we don't know. We only know what we have seen and heard, but we really don't know. And so there's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of, guesses. But everyone expected him to address the cameras when he came out with that look on his face, I guess, you know, when they were taking him back in that room. And I won't forget that, you know. And he said nothing, you know. And I think about how Jesus, you know, during the process, you know, there were times when he spoke and there were times when he was silent, yeah. You know. And so, and I remember on, I think it was Instagram. Well, it had to be since I've been kicked off Facebook, right? It's been a year now. I posted the scripture, you know, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. Mm-hmm. And even though it's been hard for me to pray for these evil son of a you know what and these bastards, you know, I have yep. to think about it. It's kind of like I just have to repeat scripture or say things because human being, and I'm not God, I'm not Jesus, and I have a tough time with it. I'm just going to be real. And, you know, if I lied, he already knows I'm lying. So, you know, I got a tough time with it. Again, mm-hmm. whether we believe some of this is pantomime or it's real or whatever your take is on it, right, it still is the event and the fact that, you know, it was kind of a crap show and a circus and all a bunch of BS and, you know, all the things. And you think about, you know, the real criminals, and you think about, you know, who was on the cross besides Jesus, right? And
yeah, real criminals. Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Well, what is the crime? The crime is challenging authority. You know, you
right.
look at the deep state. That's the real crime. I'm going to make Josh's law. Well, Josh, I'll give you a chance to talk a bit here. So I'll just think about it. I'll make you live in a couple minutes, give you a chance to get ready. But the real crime, the biggest crime, is going against the system. It's going against, you know, what people expect of going against, as we talked earlier, what's normal. You know, if you don't do what's normal, then the normal people get upset, even though what the normal people are doing is totally crazy. It's the crazy people
right.
that are doing the normal stuff because we're happy, you know. So what did Trump actually do?
Exactly.
You know, what did he actually
exactly.
do for a crime? There, nothing, really,
nothing.
Except try to make the country great.
Right.
So how do we live
right.
in a country? So here's a question for you. If you take a look at the national health versus the individual health, how can you be a healthy person in a sick nation? You know, and how does the health of the nation affect us, you know, personally? And so when think back a couple of years when Trump was in power, you know, gas was $1.85 a gallon. We were happy. And being in America, we were proud to be Americans. You know, it was great. You know, we were sticking to the Europeans and making them pay their bills. And we, you know, and Trump met with Kim Jong-un in North Korea. And they actually talked and he crossed the border. And, you know, he went to Saudi Arabia and danced with a bunch of guys with swords, you know, and the Secret Service went crazy. And just amazing. And we had the Abraham Accords and all these incredible things happened. We were happy. We were happy,
right.
except of course the
well,
deep state was miserable.
Hard.
But we, the general, the average American was really happy. So when the nation's happy, you know, the people are happy in that nation. Now it's, you know, the deep state's happy because they have all the power and control, or so they think, and the rest of us are miserable. So we have, and I've said this before on the show, but it's been a while, that the deep state is happiest when the people are miserable, and the deep state is miserable when the people are happy. Well, that's not a healthy situation for a nation.
No. And, you know, that statement that you made about how can you try to be healthy in a, you know, non-healthy world, however you said it perfectly, whatever you just said.
Well, we'll check the podcast. I don't even remember it because things go out of my head so fast.
I mean, it's hard. It's
yeah.
hard. And, you know, the other statement that you made is what did Trump do wrong and what, quote-unquote, authority? Well, who is authority? The last time I looked, Jesus Christ was the only authority and the word is the word. There's no other authority. So mm-hmm. when you, and it goes back to us, you know, people like myself, you know, when we questioned authority and said, no, we're not wearing these masks. We're not
mm-hmm.
doing this. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and so, you know, even though you see all the podcasters and all the people, if you think, and I'm not even calling the numbers correctly, but if you have 1,000 people that said, no, I'm not wearing a mask, I'm not doing this. Well, you have millions of people who did wear a mask, right? So even if the numbers are large on paper, In reality, the people who went against the grain is still smaller. So, you know, it goes back to what we were talking about Jesus. You know, he was like, I didn't do anything wrong. You know, I he didn't commit a crime. He was really speaking truth on behalf of God the Father, right? He was doing
right.
what he was told to do. you know, and so who's he going to listen to, right? Because who's the real authority in your life? It's almost, honestly, like with you and I, Greg.
That's a good point.
If you felt a calling, right, to
right.
do a radio show, or I felt a calling to do a podcast, you know, and I don't get paid to do a lot of what I do. I can either choose to be obedient to what I know is the right thing to do, or I can, you know, do something else. So when you go back to this week being Easter and looking at what happened to Trump, and I believe that Trump has been anointed, you know, because if he was not, he'd have been dust a long time ago, you know. So I believe that he does have the calling on his life, you know, and whatnot. So that's why I think there's so many parallels that are going to continue through today, through tomorrow, and, you know, who knows what the next coming days have in store, as we all are kind of sitting on pins and needles to see what's going to happen in this earthly world.
Anointed.
That's Josh in Illinois. Yeah, go ahead, Josh.
Yes, ma'am. Anointed.
Yes, I think he has the calling of God on him. And he's had the hedge of protection.
No, that's not what the word. No, anointed means clean.
Well, I think he has I think he has been called. So maybe I used the wrong word. But I think he's got that covering of the Lord over him. You know, that hedge of protection. That he has a certain calling on his life. If he would not, he like I said, the bad guys would have gotten him a long time ago.
Josh, did you have a comment on that?
Yeah, Trump has a certain vitriol when it comes to people in America.
Besides that, let's forget the perception so much. But what has he actually done that was such a crime that the perception is that you know, he's a Nazi, homophobe, you know, whatever it is they call him.
No,
but he actually didn't do anything. So why does he represent such a threat to this, you know, particular population that wants to control everybody? And you said something, CJ, just a minute ago. I'm trying to remember what it was, because things, you know, they kind of rush in and out of my head here real quickly. But
what threat did Jesus show?
Exactly.
I'm sorry?
I mean, if you answer that question, it's kind of, again, in my opinion, same thing, right?
Yep.
I can't. I'm sorry. What did you just say?
I guess your line's a little quiet, CJ, just a bit. So that's probably the issue is. Yeah. Well, go ahead. Say it again, and then we'll get Josh's opinion. Then we'll keep going.
When you said, well, what crime has Trump committed? Well, ask yourself, well, what crime did Jesus commit, and why were they trying to silence him?
Okay, that's two different things. I was asking earlier, and you said that might not have been the right word. What crime did Trump commit? I don't know, but I would not compare that to Jesus. That's not worth it. Trump continued stuff in Syria, stuff in Yemen. I don't know. He's not... His hands are not clean. Let's just say that. Can we agree on that?
No, not at all. But that's okay.
No, I think we might have to agree to disagree on this. What I can agree with you on is that Trump is human. Trump is not Jesus. I mean, he is human, right? So if we are living, breathing flesh and human, we have all fallen short. We've all committed sin. My hands aren't clean. You know, I've done a lot of stuff in my life, you know, so I would agree on the sense that he is a human being and he has made mistakes. And I think, and some of the times, and so I would agree with that, but I still disagree with the fact that, you know, I do see parallels to the story and to things that are happening. And I don't believe in coincidences, you know, of timing. And he is an earthly man.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, that's, That's the bottom line. So when you made that statement, I can agree with that statement to an extent because he's a man, you know. And the statement that you made about his hands are not clean, well, you could say that about me, and I would say, you're absolutely right. You know, but I've asked
yes.
the forgiveness of my sins. I think we can agree on one level and disagree on another level.
Okay, but here's my problem is that there are still people starving in Yemen because of America. That still happened under Trump. It still happened under Obama. It still happened under Bush. This is not a new thing. This is a longevity.
Well, what's Yemen doing about that terrible situation? What's Yemen doing about that?
You think, what can Yemen do about it? They can't do anything, my friend.
Why? How do you know that? What do you say? See, this is the thing too.
Yemen doesn't have autonomy.
Well, who controls Yemen?
Yemen exists
then?
Because other countries around them allow them to exist.
Okay, so then whose responsibility is it then? It's them, not us. See, there's this idea that there are people on that land,
my friend.
Right. Okay, I'm not a Yemen expert, obviously, but what I'm saying is there's an idea that that the United States has to be, you know, the enforcer of the world, and we have to make, you know, we have to regulate everything and the world's police force, and if we don't go in and keep everything, you know, there'll be no
Why
order in the
you
world.
Think that?
It's like no other culture has ever existed, and that's incredibly unhealthy, I think, speaking of wellness, which is
yes,
sort of like our general thing here.
That's a terrible way to think. Yes, that's a terrible way to be. I'm saying
okay.
that there are people – On
but
the
of
other
all the,
side of the
of
world,
all the things,
in Yemen.
But what does Yemen have to do with the United States? What does that have to do with us here?
We are going out of our way to shut off their supply lines to bring food into their country. Right now.
Yeah.
We've been doing it
yeah.
for almost a decade.
Okay, that makes no sense. Why would we do that?
Because we're partners with Saudi Arabia, who's at active war with them.
Well, we're not getting
along
with Saudi Arabia these days.
People.
They're cutting back our production. All right, let's save that for another time. Let's go back to what
yep.
you know, sort of our main topic here, because I think this is a really scattered day. We're really all over the place. It's kind of interesting. Go ahead, CJ.
Okay, no, I think, and maybe. So this conversation that we're having and the points of agreement and the points of choosing to disagree with one another, right, that's a
mm-hmm.
healthy thing. We all don't have to agree. Hence, I go back to not just this Easter week, but in general, you know, we have to focus on some of the positive things because there are so many negative things that can send us into a spiral. So for us to be able to put our mental and emotional health, you know, at a priority level, along with going
mm-hmm.
into what we're putting into our bodies, even though you had made the comment, Greg, and I had said that I couldn't remember the exact statement, is how do you keep your body healthy in a toxic world? Or you made some sort of statement like that. And there's no blanket statement answer to that. There is no
mm-hmm.
answer to that because it's mm-hmm. tough and it's challenging. You can only do what you know to do, you know, washing your fruits and vegetables. You can only be so proactive. So at some point you have to trust God, you know, and that should be the first thing that we're doing, you know, period. And then doing all the things, but bringing this conversation,
mm-hmm.
and this little bit of a debate that we're having back and forth, if it can be done in a healthy way and we can agree to disagree, you know, because there are some statements that, you know, are true, even if, you know, what, it's Josh, correct? Josh is saying is correct. You know, we only have control over so much, and it's almost like the what's the word I'm looking for? It's the cliche statement of choose your battles, the lesser of all evils, which I hate
mm-hmm.
that statement, but it's a great cliche, right? So, and you know, bringing it back to the last statement that I'll say regarding Trump and this week, because I think I've kind of made the parallels, what I think of this week and what's happened kind of true and where I stand and all that,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether what Josh is saying is true or not, and that could be true, right? We have that issue of food. Again, when you have a human in charge of things, not everything is going to be perfect, but when it comes to Trump, my bottom line is I think the events have lined up with Easter. I think that he has had a calling, and I used the wrong word, anointing, so my apologies.
Well, I didn't use the wrong word.
But he has had.
I understood what you meant. Know, it's just that, as in chosen, absolutely. Yeah.
Right, on him. And does that mean, whether it's Trump or somebody else that we think is so great, is going to do everything to get this world in tip-top shape perfect? There's always going to be something that's right. There's no perfection in this world. That being said, many of you have heard the statement, and I've said it, you know, I'd rather have a smart ass and a good businessman than a dumb ass and somebody that's sniffing children. And again, whether you think that this is a show or he's an actor or it's the real Biden, whatever mm-hmm. your conspiracy theory is, right, there is going to be no man that's going to be the president of the United States or in that role that's going to run the world to perfection. It's God's mm-hmm. job to do a lot of those things. And so you have to, I mean, that's just kind of where I stand on that. So I'm not disagreeing with the fact that.
Yeah. There's conflicts, though. And I think one of the biggest things that really contributes to your health is realizing, you know, it's like the old saying, what do you have control over? You know, the things, you know, control the things you can. Don't worry about the things you can, and have the wisdom to know the difference, right? And so this goes for our nation. You know, how healthy is our nation? What are the problems? You know, what can I do about the situation in Yemen? Nothing. I don't even know about it. But what I'm saying is that, you know, it's like that old thing when your parents said when you were a kid, you better eat your vegetables because people are starving in India. Okay, well, those are two totally separate events. One, my vegetables in front of me, and two, people starving in India. They have nothing to do with each other. That's like saying, you know, if a butterfly lands on a mailbox and two cars crash in front of you, butterflies cause car accidents. That's insane.
Right.
but bring it back to our personal health. What can we control? And I just find it fascinating that in the situation now, that those that want to control, that the need to control other people is a true sickness. That to these people, the whole deep state, that I've got a secret, you don't know what I know, therefore, you know, I'm more important than you are. This idea that the Trump represents is evil simply because he wants the country to be great, and somehow that's a bad idea. And so as people are going through their day, go ahead.
Right. No, again, let's take it back, you know, to your health. That's why when we first started at the top of this hour, I said, you know, having your morning routine to try to set your day and mm-hmm. keeping your focus, you know, again, cause like you just said, you can only be so proactive. I mean, crap happens, right? And we're mm-hmm. not, we think we have control over certain things, which we do to an extent, but ultimately God's in control of our lives, right? We can only be in control of so many things and be,
but
you
we still have free will and we still make decisions. The free will to make bad decisions too. And that's all part of it as well. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I do think it's important to do those certain things in the morning physically, like those suggestions that I talked about at the top of the hour. I do think it's important to, you know, whether you're a believer or not, getting in the Word of God in the morning, or doing a yoga thing if that's your thing, or doing a meditation, or going for a walk with your dog, or getting fresh air, you know, and saying, okay, you know, there are certain things that I'm in control of and there are certain things that I'm not, and then I just have to trust. So there are things that we can applicably apply, to our lives. And then looking this week as to, okay, so what can we be thankful for this week? You know, we can be thankful for this week all this pantomime bull crap that went on this week, how much bad stuff was exposed, you know, more of the deep state with Bragg in New York and all these things. And think about Pandora's box that was open, that we can only pray and hope, and hope is going to trickle down to others. So, you know, I think, and it's hard sometimes, but I think that's where we have to be, rather than the rewind and rewind and rewind and rewind of all the bad, because that's really not going to get us anywhere. That's not mm-hmm. going to propel us forward.
Yeah, so it goes back to the original thing we were talking about with the news. You know, people feel compelled to watch the news because society tells them, or so they think, they have to be informed. But on the other hand, the news might make them miserable. So the real issue
is not what's on the news. The real issue is why you feel the need to watch something that you know makes you feel miserable. And so that kind of empowering, there's an empowerment that needs to go into. So the more control you have over your own life and the decisions that you make, the better you're going to feel. The less powerful you feel, oh, no, you know, we can't solve, you know, there might be another Irish potato famine in 100 years, you know, or climate change. This is like the big one. Worry about climate change. What, do you really think that you can legislate the temperature difference? I mean, come on. You know, yeah. And so this is a very unhealthy thing that we're in this society, the arrogance of thinking we can change things we can't change, and the needless worry that goes into all kinds of stuff, you know, that is put on people. I mean, right. The whole idea of propaganda and psychological abuse and all these other things that are going on all the time are really pervasive, and you almost have to have a safeguard against that kind of stuff. Have a morning routine. Drink your coffee, scrape your tongue. But in other words, the simple things, you know, translate into the complex. And if you can take the basics and then say, okay, what matters to me? What, you know, and still take on the cosmic issues, you know, the issue of national security and, you know, fraudulent elections are incredibly important, but what part do you have to play in that? What can you do? What can you not do? And can you be happy with what you can do? And I think these are all huge things that people don't take into account while considering these major earth-shattering issues, like what happened today with Trump or with this week.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I agree with you. Yeah.
Well, that was easy. Now what do we do?
So the morning coffee, like I said, I think that's a topic that I will table. I will table that topic because I think that could be an interesting conversation that we could have another time, so people can kind of evaluate that, or if anybody wants to come on and, you know, share their morning routine or want something, you know. But you know, I would say, you know, going into this week, you know, have some sort of a thankful, grateful routine, something that is of good intentions, you know, this week, and try to set a precedent. You know, here I use that word again. Every time I use it, I think of Trump setting a precedent for all the other crimes that all these other presidents have committed that will hopefully open, you know, Pandora's box, because that's really what I believe it was, setting a precedent for other things to happen. But neither I digress. Setting a precedent for, you know, a spring couldn't be in a better time, you know, and if you're a follower of Jesus, you know, really get into his word, celebrate the weekend and what is to come, because that's the best thing that we can do. Because ultimately, said he's going to be in control of the outcome of this. He's in control of our health. He's in control of everything. We can just be as proactive as we can, implementing the things here that we know that we can do to the best of our ability.
Makes sense. Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. I don't know if you're able to hang on for our next some of our next hour, or do you have to go at the top of this hour? So I make sure I get everything covered.
Yeah, I actually have to, you know, I homeschool, so I definitely have to get some stuff done with my daughter.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Okay, all right. Because we can take a break now. I'm trying to think of anything else. We've covered so much, and here's what happens. Whenever I have these huge interviews, like the one I'm about to do with Ed Dowd, I prepare literally days ahead of time. And so a lot of times, unfortunately, some of my other reports, you know, don't have as much into them from me, simply because I'm devoting so much to this. Because, you know, it's really critical what's going on. The work that he's doing, for example, you want to talk about, you know, I wonder what kind of personal stress he's under. Because here's a guy that was Wall Street, you know, made billions of dollars in his growth management fund, and then all of a sudden discovered that all kinds of folks were dying prematurely. You know, and it's fascinating to me that this came about because of insurance people, the life insurance folks. Wait a minute, you know, we're having to pay out a whole bunch of money here. What's going on? And the morticians, wait a minute, we're seeing things with dead people we never saw before. And they're like the whistleblowers. Because, you know, people, and it's interesting, it's like a detective story. It's like a murder mystery. You know, you look at Columbo, some little thing that happens. You know, all of a sudden some mortician somewhere or some, you know, insurance agent goes, wait a minute, I got more people dying this year. What's going on? You know, and then, of course, you know, the government will say, well, it's not happening. Everything's fine. The vaccine is safe and effective. You know, shut up. Don't worry about it. Go away. And so that is a sickness, this denial. This control that requires a denial of the obvious, and that people have to wrestle with that too. So there's a whole interesting thing to explore at some point. I don't know if you have a comment on that.
I might just take a break here in a little bit and to play a couple things before I get here and then sort of start fresh with him. But that whole idea that the people that are think they're in control of everything because they worship government, not God, because they believe that they can control everything and control everybody, which they can't. That they get all upset when, the cat gets out of the bag or, you know, that all of a sudden people, that's something they never expected to happen. Morticians and insurance people have shown that their COVID vaccine isn't a vaccine, you know, is neither safe nor effective. In fact, it's actually deadly and useless. You know, so now what do they do? And yet they're still putting the same message out there like nothing's happened. It's really quite fascinating. You want to talk about denial.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like I said, you know, there's only so many things that are in our control right now because, you know, we can, and, you know, I do this too, you know, with other things that I do, we talk about where we were 3 years ago, where we were 2 years ago, where we were a year ago. We need to address where we are now and move forward. We can't go backwards. We cannot go backwards. So what do we do? And my first resource is just praying, you know? And I personally have seen a lot of things transpire with people. You know, I really have. And testimonies and things like that through faith, through repentance, through things like that. So I would just say, again, wrapping this up, moving forward for this Easter weekend is just being, you know, being grateful for those of us who are awake, being grateful for the resources we have, and we can't go backwards. We can stay stuck with where we are. That's a choice. Or we can choose to propel forward and to help others, pray for others, use the resources, and because we can't change. You can't change what happened 10 years ago. You can't change what happened 2 years ago. You can't change what happened last week. You know, if you had a fender bender, that sucks. You can't go back and change it. You know what I mean? So
unfender bend it.
So we have, and that's why I'm saying our mental and emotional health, it's challenging, you know, but we have a choice to be stuck in what's going to ultimately be our demise one way or the other, right? And someday we're all going to meet Jesus or if you're a believer, right? But what I'm saying is right now we can either choose to be stuck in our demise and live our days unpurposeful, unproductive, you know, not helping others, not trying to find solutions, or we can move forward because we can't go back and do the best that we can do. And so I think that's kind of where we are, you know, with our health, with our food. We can't act if they're trying to kill us with poisons in the food. You know, all we can do is do what we know how to do, you know. Just like with the whole electric cars versus gas. Well, don't buy an electric car if you don't want to feed into their agenda. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You know, we can take this into so many different directions. But, you know, I would just say that I wish everybody a very, very blessed Easter. You know, look up, don't look down, because that's what we need to be doing anyway. And push forward instead of keep looking backwards, because backpedaling is not going to get us anywhere. I mean, that's the bottom line. But I certainly wish everybody a very, very blessed Easter season and Resurrection Sunday. And I will be in touch with you, Greg, and I will look forward to talking with everybody next Thursday.
Sounds good. All right. Contact information of any kind. And then I'm going to play a couple things here and away we go. Yeah.
Yep. Anybody that wants to reach me can email me at h2owellness@gmail.com, and that's H2O Wellness Network. Sometimes people have sent me emails and they use a zero. It's not a zero. It's h2owellnessnetwork@gmail.com. And I do check my spam folder as well. So if you have any questions or need any resources or you want to even have a fun, awesome debate with me, I'm all about it.
Well, it sounds good to me. I'm just checking my phone numbers. My guest is already here, so I'm not going to play a couple of things. I'll just go right to Ed Dad, who's on the line right now. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful time.
You guys have a blessed Easter.
You have a blessed Easter, too.
Bye-bye.
And we'll talk next week. Thank you, CJ. All right, there we go.
Bye-bye.
All right, so let's get to our guest of the day. Mr. Ed Dowd. So I first saw Ed Dowd in a special with Tucker Carlson. It was Died Suddenly Hour. It was incredible. And so I've learned more and more about this person. In fact, my friend in Washington that actually arranged for him to be here sent me the book, the whole bit. So I've been just getting as much as I can here. I've got a quote that I have from way back here in the introduction to the book. And let me see if I get this right here. It's actually from Robert Francis Kennedy Jr. And he's talking about, let me see if I get this right here. I'm disorganized this morning. I apologize. It's been a little bit of a crazy time here. It said, among the worlds, here we go. It says, among the worlds, I have like 3 hours worth of material to talk about in a much shorter time. Among the world's towering financial titans is BlackRock, a company with a bigger economy than every country on earth except the U.S. and China. They manage $10 trillion in assets. In 2002, BlackRock recruited the brilliant Wall Street careerist, Edward Dowd, and soon promoted him to serve as managing director. The growth fund he managed started at $2 billion. By the time he left BlackRock, it was $14 billion. And then it says, in 2021, Dowd found himself withdrawing from Wall Street to study an entirely new kind of trend, the expanding and tragic epidemic of sudden deaths among healthy young people. That, to me, seems like a huge transition. So I've just made his line live, and I want to welcome Ed Dowd to Action Radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on today. Good to be here.
Well, it's a real pleasure. What you're doing is fascinating. And I want to tell you a little bit about what we do, but I also want to get as much of your book as we can, because I've been going over it pretty carefully. But first of all, let's get a round of applause for what you do. So the book is Cause Unknown, The Epidemic of Sudden Deaths in 2021 and 2022. So let's, I'm sure you've been asked this question before, but I think it's important to go over it, is how, you know, first of all, how was Wall Street, and how does somebody from Wall Street totally change from what I imagine was a great job and a good living and a good company and everything else that you were doing, and all of a sudden go, wait a minute, something's wrong here with the amount of, I guess, the all-cause mortalities that have increased drastically. How did you make that transition? And just sort of tell me your story. Take all the time you want from Wall Street to this new place that you are now.
Wasn't the wise. Well, it's really not that different. Yeah,
okay.
Greg, it's really not that different. I'm often asked, well, how are you qualified to speak on this issue? You're not a doctor. You're not an epidemiologist. Well, I think that is actually a good thing. I'm a Wall Street analyst. You know, my whole career has been on Wall Street, fixed income and equity. So I've spanned both sides of the equation. And my job on Wall Street was to pick stocks and make money for my clients. And you do that through pattern recognition and understanding that trends are changing before everybody else figures it out. Because the real money is made by living between the worlds of perception and reality. The crowd, the street, the herd thinks one way of perception, and the numbers underneath are changing, and you identify that new reality before everybody else. You position yourself and your clients for that trend change, and then once the herd figures it out, the stock goes up a lot. So that's my job. That's what I do. And I noticed a disturbing new trend in the early days of 2021 with anecdotes of you know, weird things happening to my friends who were taking the vax. You know, in 2020, I live here on the island of Maui. You know, I didn't know anybody who died. And then all of a sudden, 21, you know, so-and-so's uncle on the mainland died. And then my dad would tell me, oh, so-and-so I know died. And it just these types of stories started percolating where there were none in 2020, for me, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And so anecdotes, and I know a couple of things because of my background on Wall Street and analyzing healthcare stocks. I knew that vaccines that are safe and well vetted, that it takes 7 to 10 years of safety data before they put it in someone's arms, usually, that severe adverse events do occur, death being one of them. And they're so rare that I shouldn't be hearing of them, but I was hearing multiple. So my warning signals went up, and, then when the mandates came in June of 21, that's when I became activated, because I'm a believer in free choice and body autonomy. So I started protesting here on Maui and met up with Dr. Malone, who came to the island, and I told him I was going to monitor funeral homes and insurance companies, because if my suspicion was correct, it would show up in those areas, and it surely did. And it's begun a journey of discovery. I have a team of I have a firm now, Finance Technologies, with two PhD physicists, and we've discovered some rather horrifying things that lead me to believe that the vaccine is the cause of what we're seeing. And if people have another explanation, love to hear it. But nothing is quite as damning as the vaccine and the mandates.
Interesting. Yeah, just talking to you, I can toss. I have like so much stuff prepared because I never know exactly where these chats are going to go, and I'd much rather be spontaneous. Also, Judy Mikovits is on the line too. Apparently, you two know each other. So, Judy, you feel free to join us at any time here. But she's a friend of the show and is one of the strongest proponents of our bill for vaccine product liability. And I'll tell you a little bit about what we do in a bit. But you made something that was really key, a statement you made earlier, that because you're not an epidemiologist, because you're not a, you're not what I would call in the bubble. In fact, the worst people to talk about law are sometimes are lawyers. You know, and as I say on the show here, I'm uniquely unqualified for everything I do. We've created a citizen legislature. We actually write legislation, title, section, the whole bit, Congress ready, state legislature ready. And yet none of us are lawyers or professional, you know, folks, bill writers or things like that. But because of that, we're open to new possibilities. And I see the same thing with you. So when you talk about trends, you know, that you see things that people don't see, you know, and you're looking for the trends, I'm actually trying to create a trend. You know, trying to create new things that people don't see, and then they're asking, you know, what's the question? You know, if it can't, you know, why are you trying to do that? It's never been done before. Well, that's the perfect reason, you know. And if not now, you know, when? And if not us, who? It's that same kind of thing. So, as somebody who isn't locked into a bubble, that really opens you up to all kinds of new ways of looking at things. So, but Wall Street in particular, I'm just curious about the financial end, because you've got a statement here. This is be early, be right, and be loud. A common problem is that people are hesitant to go against the grain of consensus. So let's relate that to the vaccine. It's safe and effective. The government says it's safe and effective. They're the experts. You go against that, and you get what happened to us at Action Radio, where you're completely censored. So do you think of yourself as a pioneer of this information? Does it bother you in any way that you are bringing new stuff out there? I mean, how does that what you did at Wall Street, is like your career is in being out, you know, saying things that are different for people? I'm just curious.
Yeah, correct. And, you know, an interesting thing about Wall Street that people may not understand is everybody starts their career and usually stay in the same silo. And there's different silos on Wall Street. And, you know, I was able to make a good career on Wall Street by arbitraging the different silos. So in 2006 and 2007, there was a real estate bubble, and people in that silo couldn't see it, the disaster coming. But because I used to have experience in the credit markets and had an open mind, the refrain then was home prices never go down. Well, all you had to do was Google home prices going down, and you said – and you saw literally that they do go down, but they hadn't gone down for decades. So people were asleep thinking they never went down, but they do. Then there's cycles. So I said, well, home prices do go down, and there's a lot of weirdness going on in the real estate market and fraud. So I'm going to monitor what's going on there. And I was able to help my clients lose less money than everybody else that year. And then, you know, at the bottom, we turned and got bullish. But, you know, the point is that I thrive I like solving puzzles. So this is part of a intellectual exercise for me. So I saw something that others didn't see. So I had a thesis, and when you have a stock thesis, you put the thesis out there before all the information is complete. And as time rolls on, you're either, your thesis is either confirmed or you're wrong. If you're wrong, you sell the stock and you said, well, I gave it a shot. I'm out. And in my journey since I began this, the data is getting more confirmatory that I'm not only right, I'm probably 200% right. It's, at this point, we're seeing things that we shouldn't be seeing. I've said publicly the last several weeks with the new data we found that there is a pandemic. It's a pandemic of the vaccinated, and the numbers we're seeing in terms of lost work time, excess deaths, and disabilities would suggest there's a pandemic now that's way greater than the COVID scare fear-mongering that we saw, but the global governments are silent about it, and I think I know why, because they're the ones that caused it. So this is the greatest cover-up I've ever seen. I'm not afraid to speak the truth because that's just what I do. I'm kind of a bullheaded person that way. And on Wall Street, that's what I did. And when I was wrong, I would pull a 180 and admit I was wrong. And if I'm wrong here, I'll pull a 180 publicly. But unfortunately, I'm not wrong, I don't think.
No, I know you're not wrong. And, you know, you're preaching to the converted here, or what is it, preaching to the choir. Let me give you a quick history of us here. February, well, I think I had COVID the first week of January in 2020, before we even knew what it was. I got over it, took a couple of days rest, coughed a whole lot. You can hear it on my shows. I sound terrible. I was looking for a guest host. We had one of my favorite people in the world, Dr. Peter Pry, one of the foremost experts on EMP, nuclear weapons, things like that, was one of our regular guests. He brought us Bill Gertz. February 25th of 2020, he told us all about the Wuhan lab. So we knew about the Wuhan lab immediately. February 27th, I wrote a bill for Congress because I also learned about early treatments that the Congress could only spend half their money on vaccines. The other half had to be spent on early treatments. I learned about the Didier-Reld study in Marseille, France. I was learning about Dr. Zelenko, and we knew that these early treatments worked, and I was in contact with doctors around here. So as soon as who we call Dr. Fascist, Anthony Fauci, started spewing vaccines only, I'm like, wait a minute. You can't, just like you said, you use just basic logic. And I think people get hung up on their assumptions so much or what they think is supposed to believe, they forget to just use their brains. And my brain said, 15 years to create a vaccine, the virus is already here. It's too late for a vaccine. We need to kill this thing. And so I looked up, spent about an afternoon looking at ways to kill viruses, and I came up with all kinds of things, drugs, other viruses, you know, drug-virus combinations, different things that could be done for people, and eventually hit upon chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine, and then a couple of months later, ivermectin. So for us, we were already talking early treatments. We said the vaccine's a hoax, that we don't need this, we've already got this, and there's a bunch of articles to confirm it, and I've got them. I've stored these early articles that said there is no pandemic, but that message never got out there. That's when they kicked in the media to suppress it. So you're among friends here, you know, that actually think not only are you right, but I think it's a lot worse than you think it is. You were saying it's a lot worse than it is you think it is now. So how bad, projecting out, considering the amount of people that have received these COVID jabs, how bad do you think this is really going to get?
So we just put out a recent report again. You know, I wrote the book in September. It was released in December, but we continue to gather data. And I call this a fraud in progress. So we put out a vaccine damage report where we estimated the damage done to the U.S. economy in terms of human costs and dollar amount. We took a stab. And so here are the numbers. So we've and these are conservative numbers. We decided to be more conservative than bombastic. And so our numbers are probably low. So 300,000 excess deaths due to the vaccine in 21 and 22 is what we've calculated due to the vaccine. We've estimated 1.36 million disabilities and 26.6 million injuries. And the final piece of the puzzle for us was the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics absence data and work time loss data. And that's exploded 13 standard deviations above the 20-year trend line. That's what we call a black swan event. It's a massive increase. And it went up a little bit in 2020, as you would expect, because there was confusion, people getting COVID, missing work, yada, yada. But then it went up again in 21, and then it took off in 22. And so we calculated the number of people injured in this fashion via the Pfizer clinical trial adverse event rate. So we projected that out across the population. And you got to remember that they wanted to hide the clinical trial data for 75 years. And now we know why. They knew then that the safety signal was there to end the trial, but they went ahead anyways. And now we have the actual real-world results in the population. So we have about, we predict or calculate or estimate 28 million people have either died and disabled or injured, with most of those being injured. We believe the injuries are manifesting in a suppressed immune system, which then presents as people being chronically sick and missing a lot of work. And that's exploded in 2022, has major implications for the economy. The economic damage is the following: $5.2 billion for the deaths, $52 billion for the disabilities, and $89 billion for the injuries as calculated from lost work time. So we only calculated the damage based on what we could measure, which is lost wages and salaries. The problem is, of course, what we can't calculate, which is, you know, multiples of that number. And that's the productivity that's lost from those who are injured, chronically sick, who are at work but are running at 50% capacity. And then the people who are disabled and left the workforce, the ones who are left in the workplace that have to work harder and longer hours, who burn out. And so these have knock-on effects throughout the whole supply chain and are causing an untold amount of damage to the economy, because productivity is a multiplier effect. And when productivity goes down, it's very bad for the economy. So we also calculated Pfizer and Moderna's revenues in the U.S. in 2022. It was in 2022, Pfizer earned $7.1 billion in the U.S. revenues, and Moderna 4.4. So the two of them combined was 11.5. So for every $1 they made, the U.S. economy lost $13 of economic productivity that we can measure. So 150 billion divided by 11.5 is a 13-to-1 ratio.
This is insanity. Just to remind folks, the book is Cause Unknown, the Epidemic of Sudden Deaths in 2021 and 2022, and we're in 2023, and this isn't stopping. With all this amazing information that you have, all these numbers that you have, you know where the numbers are, you know where the trends are. This is not getting better until something changes. What can you do with these numbers? Who's listening to you? Who isn't listening to you? What do you want to happen from writing this book?
Well, the bottom line is, the reason I got into this is I want the vaccine program to end, full stop. And that's
okay.
What I've been trying to do, because, well, so first we need to end it, remove all the mandates left in colleges and the military and the first responders. A lot of the corporations have dropped their mandates. They're quietly pulling a Homer Simpson and backing into the hedgerow. So we need to end all this, and then we need to have a discussion that you may have been poisoned by the vaccine, because you can't treat something unless you know the root cause. And if your immune system's suppressed, there are ways to take care of that. If you don't do that, and, you know, people go to the doctor thinking it's, you know, I have shingles, I have pneumonia, I have this or that. Well, they'll treat the symptom, not the root cause. And so these buckets are not static. So if you're injured, you could eventually become disabled or dead. So these buckets can shift, and we need to stop this immediately, turn the tide, get people aware and educated on this. Colonel Teresa Long called me after we put out the report. She's a whistleblower in the military. She's a doctor. She's a doctor. She called me and said, Ed, she says, I'm seeing exactly what your report says. She said between the deaths, the disabilities, and the injuries, the woke military culture in terms of recruitment is turning people away, and people also don't want the vaccine. And those who left who already didn't want the vaccine, she said, we won't have a standing military in 5 years if these trends continue.
And yet they continue. And this is the collective insanity.
Yeah.
Let me just put a solution. And, of course, Judy, if you want to join the conversation again, feel free to do so, because she's got all kinds of vaccine injury recovery. You know, the cure for me, the two things we need to do, one, is to have Judy's program of get, you know, products out there that people who have been injured, who are worried about this time bomb in their body, to do everything they can to recover from the vaccine. And that's not being talked about because, again, there's such depression out there. My solution as a citizen legislator is we have two bills, which I sent you already. I don't know if you had a chance, because it was only yesterday, to take a look. But we have a bill for a vaccine product liability that gets rid of the vaccine compensation fund, because Big Pharma should pay it, gets rid of the declared emergency. And I wrote this 2 years ago, so hopefully it's supposed to be next month, but who knows? Things can happen. But the most important, there's two places in law where it says vaccine manufacturers shall not be liable. And what I do is I go to those places and say vaccine manufacturers shall be fully liable. I don't know if you've thought about this, but what do you think the impact would be if we could actually get this through, which I think has to be done, that vaccine product liability is put back on Big Pharma? How does that change the whole equation?
Oh, yeah. They would run away from vaccines faster than you can shake a stick at. I mean, these people put those laws in place because they couldn't make a profit otherwise. So this whole thing started in '86, and it's grown into a behemoth, and now they're trying to ram vaccines down our throats on a quarterly basis. It's absurd. This is crony capitalism run amok. And Judy's great, and you know, Judy has solutions, but we we can't even admit we have a problem yet. So I'm trying to show people we have a problem. I would love for Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's heading up the COVID committees in the House, to call me in to testify. I don't think she's reached the vaccine portion of her discovery, but when she does, I want to go. And, you know, so, you know, I look at myself as we have a problem. It's in the numbers. It's a national security issue. And, and Judy is going to provide solutions. So, you know, Judy can't provide solutions if she's not allowed to speak and no one's admitting there's a problem. This is where we are. We don't have regulators. They've left the building. They've all been captured. And, you know, this problem, it didn't happen overnight. This has been going on underneath the surface for decades. And it wasn't as readily apparent because a lot of these products were smaller population sets. But when you vaccinate, you know, 60-70% of the country and the globe, and the numbers are so big, even a guy like me can see them. This is the end of 40 years of corruption, I hope.
You said something really interesting just a minute ago, that vaccines could not make a profit without getting rid of their liability or giving them immunity from liability. Doesn't that say that in a free market system that we wouldn't even have them? That do we even need vaccines in our country if they can't, you know, use the free market and make a profit? And in fact, one of the notes I had for myself to ask you is if they had to do all the things that the taxes are paying for, the research and development, the marketing, the storage, the transportation, the packaging, the delivery, the even the instructions, the printing of all that kind of stuff, and they were responsible for the liability. Are you saying there's no money in vaccines? They couldn't make a profit?
I'm obviously curious. Not. Obviously okay. Not because there was a push by government for more vaccines, and the vaccine maker said, well, we'll do it, but you have to give us liability protection because, you know, there's a lot of risk in making vaccines. That's basically what they told them.
No, this is fascinating. This is because what you're saying is that economically in a free market, we wouldn't have vaccines because they're that dangerous.
If we did, they would be well tested and well vetted, and the market would be big enough. But the problem is, and you knew this, and Judy knew this, we all knew this, when they were talking about a vaccine for coronavirus,
right?
Corona is a cold. We've never had a. They haven't been able to develop a vaccine for corona because it mutates too fast. So the whole premise of a vaccine from the get-go, in my mind, knowing what I knew, was like, I go, this is insanity. You can't – we've never had one, and now we're going to have one with new technology. It made no sense to me from the get-go.
Well, can we create a health system that does work, with the free market? In other words, what would you call the alternatives? You know, nutrition, developing our immune system. You know, everything I've heard about let's just take polio, for example. Polio was stopped not by the Salk or the Sabin vaccine or any of those things. It was stopped by good sewage. It was stopped by chlorine in the swimming pools. It was stopped by just, you know, good sanitary conditions. So in other words, are we doing this, you know, when you're analyzing health stocks and you looked at them, would we be better off within a completely different style of health delivery and getting away from these things?
Well, so the Wall Street loves big markets and repeat cash flows. Healthcare.
Okay.
So in a very strange way, a lot of healthcare companies developed their business models to cater to Wall Street. In my humble opinion, healthcare should not be a Wall Street phenomenon. Healthcare should be wellness centers scattered throughout the country it's hard to scale up wellness centers because then you have to, you know, impose one size fits all. And, you know, what we've learned is that, you know, the body is not one size fits all. Everyone's different, but, you know, there are ways to heal the body that are similar, but they're done one-on-one. I envision after this debacle and disaster, and if I ever, my hedge fund that we're trying to fund gets started, you know, we'll be investing in wellness centers across the country, you know, to kind of change the face of healthcare. We need to go back to the way, you know, this allopathic way of, you know, solving a problem with the pill is profitable, but it doesn't really solve the problem. It just doesn't. And people are getting sicker and sicker. You know, I don't know about you, but when I was growing up in the 70s, my grandparents weren't on 75 pills. The drug industry wasn't as big back then. When they died, they just kind of died. They got the flu and they were dead in 2 days. There wasn't this 20-year march of decay, which I see in a lot of old people now on their, you know, 17 pills. So, you know, the human body is amazing, and when the way you're supposed to die is you're just supposed to like drop and you're dead. You're not supposed to decay over 15 years.
No, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I'm 63. You know, I'm still exercising. I have a little bit of weight to lose. I had, open heart surgery a few years ago to repair a valve. And ever since then, you know, I'm in pretty good shape, you know, and I keep getting better. I'm not against modern medicine, but what I'm against are the drugs and like I say, the vaccines and all these things they're putting into us. Dr. Shiba said something interesting a while back, and I wonder if this applies with healthcare as well. He said that medicine is supposed to be one-on-one. It's supposed to be individual consulting. He says, but the one place where they can make a one-size-fits-all is this whole vaccine industry. When you were looking at health stocks and health companies, did you see that the trend, the smaller, the decentralized, the alternative health places were doing well, and that doesn't fit the Wall Street model, but that the vaccine model did? Is it almost like we have two healthcare systems?
Well, it's not just vaccines. The problem is, system-wide. So when they came out with SSRIs, antidepressants, initially it was approved for special situations. And then over time, they started to grow the market. And now, you know, when these first came out, they were said explicitly, do not give to children or people with developing brains. Now we medicate mm-hmm. children all the time with antidepressants. So it's all about expanding the market, making it bigger. I'll give you an example. There's a company called Gilead.
We know about them.
And then they found a cure to hepatitis C, and Wall Street applauded it at first, but then Wall Street figured out, well, there's 80,000 hepatitis C patients in the U.S. Once they're cured, the cash flow goes to zero, and the stock actually took a hit because it was a declining cash flow. And a mm-hmm. Goldman Sachs analyst wrote a research paper on good drug business models for pharma companies. He said, you don't want to cure something. You only want to treat the symptoms because the cash flows are more sustainable. So he said in print what he didn't realize what he was saying, but that's just the reality. You do not – they're incentivized not to find cures but to treat symptoms, because when you treat symptoms, you have a cash flow. When you cure – the person is no longer a patient, and it's not a repeating cash flow stream. So everything is inverted and upside down. Capitalism and Wall Street, it wasn't a plan; it just happened. So pharmaceutical mm-hmm. companies wanted to develop drugs that had long lives and cash flow streams rather than curing something. Why haven't we found a cure to cancer? Well, I can tell you.
I was just going to ask you that. It's funny. That's exactly what was my question. Why haven't we?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it be profitable to find a cure for cancer? I mean, it seems to me that would be a huge market breakthrough.
Well, because when people get cancer, they go into this, year to 2 year long process of, very expensive hospital bills with chemo and all sorts of crazy treatments that oftentimes kill the patient. This is where we are. It's literally, when you step back from it and you have some knowledge like you and I do, it's an insane system.
Yeah. Let me, your book is great. I want to make sure we cover some things. I mean, the evidence is amazing. You know, you've got graphs, you've got charts, you've got all kinds of evidence of people dying at ridiculously young ages. The acceptance of that is unbelievable. And this is something to focus on. So anything that you want to talk about with the book, please feel free. Don't let me, monopolize everything here. But I do have a question, and it's the same question I asked Dr. Malone when he was here. Have you looked at or were you aware of the 2007 pandemic guidelines, the ones that came about before, the ones we're under now, the 2017 guidelines, because they're very different?
No, but I've heard or seen chatter about this, and if I'm wrong, correct me, but it, you know, what happened in the, this is the 2007 SARS pandemic that, we basically did everything opposite of what happened in 2007, where we basically let it burn itself out, and natural immunity eventually won, and we just kept the economies open. We did the exact opposite of what we learned from 2007, the gist of it, correct?
I don't know. That's an interesting question because I have to study what they did. But what I found was that there was something called the Pandemic Severity Index, and that the way they had decided to handle things in 2007 was to have the minimum impact on the economy, the minimum impact on our infrastructure. And by 2017, they did just the opposite. So my curiosity, and the reason I was wondering if you'd looked into this, is because, as Judy says, this was a pandemic. This was organized. And we all know that Dr. Fauci said that Trump's going to have a pandemic, you know, right before he was inaugurated. But what most people don't know is that 3 months later, April 21st, they totally changed the guidelines. And instead of waiting until a category 4 or 5 pandemic, which was upwards of 1 million to 2 million people killed from the virus, not with it, but actually from it, they went to lockdowns immediately. So in order to do what they did in 2020, they had to change the guidelines, and they changed them back in 2017. So it's almost like they knew it was coming. Did you see any trends in the market? Did you see any indications that they changed all the rules as far as pandemics in anticipation of what happened later? Did that show up at all?
Now, there were no signs in the market, but I will tell you that in 2019, the fall of 2019, the global economy was about to become unglued, because there was a overnight Federal Reserve window crisis, and there was a credit crunch coming. And then miraculously, COVID comes and allows the central banks and the governments to spend and print money like drunken sailors. And what you need to know about the money system is this. It needs constant credit creation, constant flow. It's not the actual stock of the money supply. It needs constant growth. And we were rolling over in 2019, and then we had that, like, you know, stock market panic very briefly in 2020. But if you remember correctly, all the money that was pumped into the system caused another euphoric mania, and it saved the system for, you know, until recently. The system's becoming unglued again. I don't have any proof, but I believe COVID was used as an excuse to usher in a system of control for a financial collapse. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. And my intuitive proof is a Federal Reserve President James Bullard of St. Louis got on Face the Nation in April 3rd of 2020. And they asked him, how are we going to reopen the economy? You got to go back to when everyone was scared out of their mind. And he said, well, good news. We have new technology. And we could test every day and issue immunity badges. When I heard that, I thought vaccine passport, because I knew where they were going with this. That was immediately a memory hold, because that was what they call a trial balloon. That it wasn't met very well, because immunity badges sounds a lot like, you know, gold stars like Nazi Germany. So they withdrew that. But he also said, and the good news is we have new surveillance technologies that can monitor all this. So, I mean, that was just dystopian, bizarro speak 3 weeks after lockdowns from a Federal Reserve central banker. Why is a central banker talking about this? Well, that's when it all clicked for me.
Why does the World Economic Forum have anything to do with health? I mean, you know, you look at the Great Reset and all the stuff they talk about. It's the Economic Forum. So this is really an economic disease. I'm convinced that the lockdowns, the mask mandates, and everything the government did was designed to preserve COVID. You know, because that's what happened. I think that Brian Sicknick, the Capitol Police officer who died, you know, shortly after January 6th of 2 strokes, I think he was probably the first COVID shot victim. You know, I mean, there's so many things that aren't being covered.
Well,
go ahead.
I can't speculate on that, but, you know, let's talk about what was going on in the world before 2020.
Okay.
A lot of Americans don't know this, because we already had suppression of international news in the U.S. They were called the Yellow Jacket riots in France and protests. They were going on for, you know, 18 months in France. There was Hong Kong protests. There were protests all over the globe because of the economic deterioration going on. Right. And what did COVID do? COVID wiped all those protests off the map and had everybody focused on fear and dying. And what do we see now going on in France, now that the COVID stuff is kind of waning? We have riots. We have the city burning. We have them protesting what has just occurred, which is theft. They've raised the minimum retirement age, which is essentially theft. And because they have pensions in France. And so here we are. COVID was a way to prevent protesting, to prevent its population control. Look at what's going on in China, zero COVID policy. What is really going on in China? China hit a demographic wall in 2020. My partner, Carlos Allegra, wrote a book, Economic Cycles, Dead and Demographics. He talks about it. Their GDP growth going forward is going to be nowhere near double digits. It's going to be 3% over the long term. And their economy with their number of people, that is a bad scenario for China. So their COVID zero policy is to suppress food riots, job riots, and a little bit of COVID protesting, and bank runs. So it's cover. What's going on in China is cover. So, and they tried to roll it out here. Thankfully, those of us in this battle have kind of thwarted their plan. Their plan was for quarterly boosters ad infinitum with vaccine passports, digital IDs, and, show your papers everywhere. And that because the vaccine didn't work and, Omicron came along and everybody was vaccinated, got COVID. And so now booster uptake is so low that they weren't able to implement their plan. And Pfizer stood to make $320 plus billion if this plan was hatched. Their revenues doubled from $40 billion, which took centuries to get to. In 1 year, it went from $40 billion to $90 billion in 2022.
Wow.
With COVID vaccine.
Yeah, this is. I want to see if Judy has a question. Judy, do you want to get in the conversation? Because I know you're there. Do you have a question for Ed or just want to add something? You've been so patient.
No, I'm here enjoying. Hi, Ed. I'm here enjoying somebody else talking and grabbing all my ivermectin because I got sick last night.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I've been traveling, and so I'm listening to everything, with great interest and just grateful that you and Ed are there because his statement earlier is, end it all. The program is clear criminal fraud. Not a single safety study. He said in the beginning, 6 or 7 years, and that's how long it takes to test, and that's what we've done in the past. And the answer is we haven't done that since 1986, since all liability was removed. I text you, Greg, Mike Hugo is the lowe with Barbara Lowe Fisher, who wrote the law. He's an environmental lawyer. And so you can see all the details at 1986theact.com, the movie about that act and how it's really been, and the movie's incredible for how it's really been, crippled and bastardized at the political level. The last time the last thing to totally destroy it so it doesn't exist is something called the Bruchowitz decision in 2011. And basically just from the very beginning that they wrote the law, the Compensation Act, because then Tony Fauci told then President Ronald Reagan that vaccines were unavoidably unsafe because Mike Hugo and others were winning all these lawsuits. They've got a kid drooling in a chair, after DTP shots. It was primarily DTP or diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis. And again, when we started combining all of these things, no shot, no vaccine ever worked. This is, and worked is what I said in Plandemic. That is lifelong immunity according to nature, according to God. I'll be lifelong immune to chickenpox, measles, anything else. Not that I don't make him antibodies if I'm exposed, I do. And then I don't even notice I've been boosted by whoever's walking around. So in the measles outbreaks, epidemics, everything we learned from Dell Bigtree, the High Wire, the Informed Consent Action Network, they did Freedom of Information Act for 15, 20 years, just FOIA, Ryan Hooker's and others to just prove the criminal fraud at the CDC. And really, COVID was premeditated murder of the 8% of the people who were severely vaccine injured, crippled, let's just say useless eaters, all those people I had talked about in the beginning. You know, we could, our economy can't sustain nursing homes. You know, our economy can't sustain the level of 40-year-olds with autism spectrum disorders who are basically just good at basket weaving. Or, and I don't say that in a derogatory sense. This is a problem that was created, and we've been sounding long before me, you know, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, I mentioned Suzanne Humphreys, Brian Hooker, you know, for decades. You know, this has been happening, and so we hit the point in 2019, as Ed just said, where it was convenient. We'd crashed the economy, we'd stolen all the elderly, their retirement plans, you name it, Social Security. So we had to have a little solution. So we just simply put masks, you know, hypoxia. You can't do it. You die without oxygen. Blow on a fire and what happens? Blow on ashes and what happens? The flame, oxygen, you know, the flame, inflammation. You know, so we created, they're all inflammatory diseases, and all you have to do is, you know, rob oxygen, parasites, you know, Fauci and others, they just robbed us of our oxygen and created a scenario, made up a lie, and, you know, when nobody believed it, forced everybody into it.
Here's the frustrating part, though. We know what the problems are. You know, and you know better than anybody, Judy, what the problems are, because you've been studying this, you know,
well, the
your adult life. Go ahead.
The solution that Ed just gave us, and you have in writeyourlaws.com, in changing that 1986 act and simply adding shall be held fully liable, it's over. Because in the act, in the beginning, the cases, they were winning them. If it was anything that was on the table of injuries, oh, the table injuries, that would be like Guillain-Barré or sudden adult death. There were injuries listed. And in the beginning, you can see in the movie, it's pretty well done, from a couple of years ago, Andy Wakefield, I believe it's called Chocker Films. And so this, you could see in the movie how the act, you know, as the compensation program was compensating the injured, and it would have ended, you know, the vaccines. And so they had to destroy and compromise the law with corruption after corruption. I mean, just to watch what, you know, HHS Secretary from Maryland, boy, I can't even remember her name, but what an awful human being. Just cripple the whole bill, the whole situation. And I spent 5 years in vaccine court looking at the injuries and, you know, the simple thing is if we stop it all right now and we go back to good nutrition and we've got all the solutions, we can take advantage of the technology and the advances of technology to see when we have cardiac, you know, remodeling problems. You can see every single bit of it, and the solutions are simple. But they start with not another shot for anyone, not another shot. And what people say, now I've even backed that down to not another shot, you know, for a year. So we built this alternative healthcare system called Global Tech MD and built out the CAM arm, complementary alternative medicine. And basically we're going to tell anybody who, you know, didn't want to be in the old system and wants to go back to true healthcare, you agree when you join not to give another shot. Not to even suggest it, no anything. And all it'll take is a year. And everybody will realize what the rest of us realize is that the unvaccinated are the healthy people in our country because they've got, you know, God-given natural immunity and we feed it. But our GMO foods, all the GMO plants won't feed us. You can't make capsaicin, which is the building block of aspirin, in plants anymore because that's regulated by long-chain non-coding RNA. I just mentioned RNAs. that we're injecting. We have micro, you name it. We have thousands of microRNAs and regulatory RNAs and calcium and magnesium and everything, controls everything, you know, but how simple it is. Stop it. Start growing our plants, you know, go back to heirloom seeds, go back to God. No more GMO and our problem is solved.
Yeah, I'm going to have to hold you up a little bit. This is fascinating. I mean, I love talking to you. You know I do. I just want to I'm going to get back to Ed here and remind folks the book from Ed Dowd, Cause Unknown, The Epidemic of Sudden Deaths in 2021 and 2022. So from what Judy is saying, well, first let me just get your general reaction to that. And can we move to a profitable or a better, just an entirely new system of health? Is that where we should be going?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the biggest problems with healthcare is the growth in the administrative arm of healthcare. People who aren't doctors see patients. Those people make a ton of money, and they push down dictates onto the doctors. We're gonna get rid of this middle management layer, which is useless, expensive, and provides no value. And Judy's model, and that's the model we need to go to. But yeah, we need to get the public aware of what just happened to them. And, you know, I'm convinced once the globe is aware that they've been poisoned by their governments, lots of things are going to change. We're going into an economic spiral. We have a healthcare problem, obviously, with the poisoning of the population. So there's going to be a lot of chaos and uncertainty. And what's going to fill the gap? We need to, what do we fill the gap with? And what Judy and others are talking about is part of the solution. And I'm just a Wall Street guy, analyzing and making people aware of the problem. And I come at it from a different angle. Judy and others have the solution. I'm not a doctor. I don't pretend to be one. And, you know, having gone through my own journey of health, everything that I've been told by doctors, the nutrition, food triangle, everything I've learned is a lie. And I'm basically someone who cured themselves of their own depression in 2011-12 through spirituality, nutrition, and physical exercise. And so, you know, I had my own journey with these SSRIs that ended poorly for me.
Oh, interesting.
And, that's why I'm so keen. I'm so healthy now compared to where I was in my 30s that I was going to be damned if they were going to inject me with some experimental new technology. So that's why I'm here, because it became clearly evident to me that the whole system of healthcare was a lie after I tried to treat my mild anxiety and depression, which was made worse from these drugs. And I met a psychiatrist who said, get off all these things. They don't work. Get God, eat right and exercise. I'm like, and you know, I didn't recover overnight, but over a course of a year and a half, no more depression. And so Judy has the solutions. I'm just kind of pointing out the problem. And then I wrote the book for my loved ones and other people's loved ones, because this is a battle of the marginal mind. People need to wake up. And I feel if we can just get people aware of this, just that this just happened to them, lots of things change, because evil always goes too far. And this evil system that's been hidden from many just got exposed. And it's, the numbers are so big that it's going to be hard to hide this one.
I think people are going to be angry. And you think people are mad now. Once they realize that they're a ticking time bomb, it was done intentionally. The people who did it knew exactly what they were doing, and we paid them for it. I think the resentment and the anger is going to reach unbelievable levels. I had forgotten that your own personal health journey, because I remember you mentioning it now when you had that special with Tucker Carlson. That makes a huge difference, because, you know, when you can see this personally, it brings it all into focus, and then you realize the power that you do have as an individual. So let me ask you a sort of like an action radio question. Would you be interested in helping, as Judy is doing, with our bill on vaccine product liability, our bill that would basically end big tech censorship the same way, which says that because they're immune from anything anybody posts and any use of search engines, then if they mess with anything anybody posts or touch anybody's account or arrange the search engines, they lose their immunity and they can be sued exactly in the same way that big pharma can be sued. You know, that liability really is the key
not new regulations, not new government agencies, not millions and millions of dollars, you know, spent for this, but just simply bringing back liability to both big tech and big pharma for what they're doing. Is that something that you'd be interested possibly in helping? Or, I mean, you think about it for a while if you want, but I'm curious. So I'd love to have you. I'm looking for all the help I can get.
My problem is this. Everybody wants me to do something for everybody. So I have to have a lot of discernment. I'm not saying no, but we did. If you go to our website, financetechnologies.com, spelled PH, we have the Humanity Project. What we feel we've done is we've basically proven the case. And all our data is there, free to the world as a force multiplier. We believe it's evidence that can be presented to a court of law. So you don't necessarily need me. Because I can't be everywhere all at once. I have, Canada wants me, Florida wants me, Idaho wants me, and I have to kind of just pick and choose where I think I'll have the most impact. I'm not saying no, but look at the data. I think my data would be more helpful to you than me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do you have any advice for me, you know, trying to create the citizen legislature here?
Just the data. Look, this is a battle of the truth versus lies. And what we put on our website is the truth. It's the numbers, and you, in your writing of the laws, can incorporate that any way you wish. It's free.
Okay.
It's free. It can be used, replicated. We're not claiming ownership. You use it any way you want. I mean, we have documented the excess deaths in all of Europe, the UK, Germany, Ireland, Australia, the US. We've done a US disabilities analysis. We've linked the Pfizer clinical trials to the real world reactions we're seeing. We put out a vaccine damage report. I hope the vaccine damage report is used by states' attorney generals, because big tobacco was defeated once it was realized that it was costing the state Medicare system money. They were able to get discovery. So that's why we put an economic cost on this. We want people to know this is a real dollar hit, and all these state budgets are going to get bankrupted. I'm already hearing the COVID goodies from the government ended, and now we're hearing about hospitals in dire straits financially. So we're going to see a healthcare collapse, full stop, and Judy and others are going to be the ones that fill the gap. So Judy and her crew will fill the gap.
I wonder where the lawyers are, because you mentioned big tobacco, and I was thinking about that too. That's a lot of the model that I use for a liability on big pharma. Have they completely dropped the ball? Are they not reading all this amazing information that you provide? Are they not trying to use this? Are they not trying to overturn the law themselves? I mean, I've tried to reach the national trial lawyers, and they're not interested in what I'm doing. But do you see the lawyers as having dropped the ball for their responsibility?
Well, the lawyers, this was such a clever psychological operation.
Okay.
And they turned it into this tribal virtue signaling nonsense. So on Wall Street, you know, you can't rationalize facts to someone whose position is based on emotion. And a lot of people get emotional about stocks and ride them all the way to zero. So we now have people that mandated vaccines for their employees, that took the shots themselves based on some false emotional fear, tribal identity, what have you, and now they're stuck with a cognitive dissonance, and they are loath to admit they're wrong. So when you go to the trial lawyers, they've all jabbed themselves up, they bought into this, and they think you're crazy. But you know what? As time rolls on, it's starting to percolate, and word of mouth is spreading. And I think it's a matter of time before the trial lawyers association wants to talk to you. I think time is on your side, and they're going to flip, and eventually they'll warmly receive you. But they need to go through the process of grieving, which is denial, anger, depression, acceptance. And a lot of them are still in denial, unfortunately, Craig.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, my frustration is I wrote this bill 2 years ago. In fact, we had our two-year anniversary with Judy last Friday talking about this. The big tech bill is almost 2 years old. I think that was June. So I feel in some ways, you know, having seen so far ahead
of this. And you know, it's like offering solutions when people don't know the problems is incredibly frustrating. I got a little different question for you, just based on more getting back to the book again. Did you go to the insurance companies and the morticians, or did you discover the data they were putting out? How did you come to find this problem using those two sources? Because I remember when I first heard this myself, that the insurance industry was reporting 40% excess mortality. I'm like, what is going on? I said, of all the places to find the information, how did you come to know about this? Did you look for it there, or was it you discovered the information that had come out?
Well, so in the first quarter of 2022, I told Dr. Malone I was going to monitor the insurance company results that are publicly available and funeral home results, because if I was correct, insurance companies should start losing money and take on higher than expected losses, and funeral companies should mm-hmm. be beating expectations. And sure enough, that's what happened. The insurance company started seeing losses in what's called group life policies. And they saw the losses there first because of the Byzantine accounting of insurance. So there's group life policies and then there's whole life policies. Group life policies are given to corporations, Fortune 500, mm-hmm. mid-sized companies for their employees. And they're small, you know, you get one or two times your base salary should you die. It's great business for insurance companies because, you know, folks in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s don't die because they're employed and they're healthy for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
They started dying, so they started losing money there. It showed up in the company results. They talked about it publicly. Of course, they blamed COVID at the time.
Right.
And what was interesting about that is, COVID didn't really kill working-age folks in 2020. This all happened in 21 and 22. And the funeral home companies are now, even as of the last quarters, are saying – this business that we thought would normalize, because, you know, the CEOs of the funeral home company said on their calls, we expect this excess mortality that we've been benefiting from to go back to normal. And it hasn't. And now they're saying, well, we expect excess mortality to be elevated. And they talk about, and they say COVID for the most part is done. So it's non-COVID related issues. They won't name the vaccine for whatever reason, but their business is good and continues to be good. And they have I hate to say this, but funeral homes are kind of a little bit of a growth industry now. I put out a tweet yesterday that private equity firms are looking at the death business because the growth rate of the death business is 8.4%. It's become a growth industry. Anything above 5 is a growth industry. And so private equity firms are going to start rolling up death care and hospice companies because you know, there's money to be made, apparently.
Oh, that is fascinating. I mean, but it makes perfect sense. If you look at it from a purely economic point of view, the fact that so many people are injured and crippled and are dying from these things, that the industries that handle these things, because somebody, you know, has to do it, they're going to be growing. What about workman's comp? Are people, because I know you've spent a good time in the book on disability, on the amount of disabilities people have, and this, you know, from the working folks that were required to get the jab on the job, is that covered by workman's comp? Is workman's comp going to be massively expanded to cover all these people? How are they going to have their disabilities covered?
Well, there's a confusion in the workman's comp industry. I was reached out to by someone. They didn't require me to do anything. They just informed me this is an issue. And what he stated was he thinks it's the vaccine, but, you know, people in his industry don't really even contemplate that it's the vaccine. So this is a fraud in progress. And my goal has been to educate and get the issue elevated to the national level. I went to before Senator Ron Johnson, said we have a national security issue. The military and all the able-bodied employed have been poisoned. Their health outcomes are worse than the general U.S. population, which has never occurred in the history of the nation. Because mm-hmm. by the mere fact that you're going to work, you know, you're healthy. Because we have 320 million people in this country. We have an active labor force of full-time of about 100 to 120 million. The civilian labor force is 164. And so we just poisoned the people who are doing all the stuff. I mean, this is look, if this was a plan, and I don't know if it was, but if I was, wanting to take over the U.S., Mm-hmm. Would it be good to do what the Viet Cong did? The Viet Cong didn't want to kill a soldier. They wanted to injure a soldier because they knew it would muck up the supply. For every one soldier injured, there's five people, five resources that are diverted from the war effort. So if you wanted to take over the U.S. without firing a shot, wouldn't you like to cripple the most able-bodied members of the military and the workforce so that then the nation has to focus on taking care of them and divert precious resources to that endeavor rather than, you know, building things, creating things, you know, productive things. So I'm not saying it's a plan, but if I was an evil genius and I want to take over the United States, this is what I would do. I'm just putting that out there.
No, I mean, feel free to put anything up there.
Waltz in 5 years. Waltz in the country with infrastructure intact in 5 years.
Huh. Technically, we're at the top of the hour. I don't know if you have to leave, but we can actually run a little bit over time. So it's up to you if you want to stay. I just love talking to you. This is fascinating. If we can do, and of course, if anything we should mention, please let me know. But let's go to the ultimate dark side. You got the World Economic Forum. You got the globalists. You got the World Health Organization. You got the Chinese Communist Party. You got all these folks that are trying to, you know, everybody wants to rule the world. But they never can because they always screw up. There's always something that goes wrong. Like I say, Americans are still somewhat independent. We're not taking the boosters. What do you think the ultimate plan, the ultimate goals, and maybe like the ultimate defense for us is with these so-called self-appointed masters of the world? What would you say to all that?
Well, look, the biggest problem, I don't fear them. I fear the citizen who thinks everything is fine and nothing wrong has happened.
Okay.
The ignorance of this is an educational time, and the system's been corrupt for, you know, decades and decades. There's been a lot of thievery and pilfering of the government treasury for a long time. And the fact that we just poisoned 5 billion people, we can alert those people to the fact things change, and it'll be bumpy and turbulent. Maybe chaotic, but it'll change. So the biggest enemy of us are those who don't know. There's not enough people in the government to rule us. They rule us by co-opting the minds and hearts of those who are still in fear and trust authority. Those are the people we need to convert. I call it the marginal mind. Once the globe is aware that it's been poisoned, everything changes. This is where evil messed up. Evil went too far, in my humble opinion.
You know, I had a theory that with the resistant and the compliant, they basically, you know, poisoned the compliant people and the resistant, you know, us. We're out there who did not take the jab. We're the ones who are going to be around. It's like the opposite of war, where the brave get killed and the ones that didn't fight are left to rebuild the society, the weaker people. Whereas in this instance, it's actually reversed. The stronger, the more resistant, the more independent people are the ones who did not take the jab, and the more compliant are the ones who did. Does that kind of a trend, have you thought about that at all? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it seems like the most bizarro plan, if it was a plan. And, you know, I got to be honest with you. A lot of people think that many people didn't take the jab and, you know, all the, you know, that this is this plot where everybody was in on it and knew. I think if it was a plan, it was very tightly controlled at the top, and a lot of the people that think they're in the club are not in the club. I know I've heard stories of very wealthy people who clearly are not in the club because they took the jab, they bought into it, and now they're starting to awaken to the fact that this jab is poisonous. My book is making a dent. Some of these people have read my book, and I've heard through the grapevine that they're horrified. So there are not, if it was a plan, there's not that many people in the club. And I find that interesting.
Yeah, and the more people tightly plan, the more things go wrong. Let's get your book title out again. Scrolling back up the top of my notes here. Cause Unknown, The Epidemic of Sudden Deaths in 2021 and 2022. Anything else you want to say on that? Anything that I should have covered that I didn't? Feel free.
Well, the book was written for my loved ones and others. If you're already of the opinion that we are, you know, you can read it, you'll love it, but it's really meant for you to give to someone else to convince them. And I left out the who and the why. I wrote, you know, when we were writing the book, I had 6,000 words dedicated to the who and the why, my theory of the case. We took it out because it's just my opinion. I wasn't in the room. I think it's the best guess. But what the book is designed to just say it is that this is occurring. It's true. The who and the why isn't important. But at this point, the global government see what we see, and it's a cover-up. So I do say without knowing whether it was a plan or a mistake, at this point, it's a cover-up, and a cover-up is a crime. So it's a crime either way. It either was a plan, mistake, but at this point, it doesn't matter because they're covering it up. They're continuing to kill people to cover their butts. And, people are going to go to jail regardless. Whether it was a maniacal plan or not, at this point, it's a crime. That full stop.
Yeah, I'm just wondering who's going to have the guts to arrest them and actually end this. That I think is going to be that's the big question. We have to wait and see. Judy, do you have another comment for Ed while he's here? And then I should probably let you go just because I'm sure you have a million other things to do. But I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And it's been, like I say, it's so many questions. I almost didn't know where to start. Yeah. Sir?
Did you send me your bill and all that. I haven't had a chance to look at it. I'll take a look.
Okay. Well, take your time. Yeah. I've got three of them. Vaccine product liability.
All right.
Big tech liability. And the third one is a constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. That's if you ever want to talk economics sometimes, feel free to come back on the show anytime. And it's been great to have you.
Yeah, what I'll do is I think you send me your text. I'll send you my email, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, and take your time. No rush. I just appreciate having you out there. Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it.
All right. Does Judy want to say anything?
Judy, do you have another comment?
I just appreciate Ed and I appreciate the approach. I appreciate that he took out the who and the why because, it doesn't matter as far. Well, it does, but, that'll end and people will figure it out eventually. It was small and tightly controlled, and I love your approach. I just love your approach, Ed, just to say, here's just what it is, and here's who benefited, and all of us were poisoned, and now we have to figure out what to do so it never happens again.
Makes
exactly.
sense to me.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Ed Dowd, thank you, sir. Dr. Judy Mikovits, thank you. And that should be it for today, and I really appreciate everybody being on the show. This has been incredible. Sort it out. You take care, too. Bye now.
Bye. Bye,
Bye
Judy.
Now. Bye, yeah.
All right. Oh, boy. this is me. Oh, if everybody's dropped. Okay, so it's just me now. Yeah, let me just play a couple things here. This is, like I said, these interviews, I almost over-prepare. I get too much stuff. I have so many questions, so many places to go. And then, once I get to talking to our guest, it's fascinating that I go off in totally different directions. So like I said, I'm still learning how to do this myself, and we'll get better as we do more and more of it. So I got a few things to play for y'all. Our website's the big ones. Of course, the show, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative site, writeyourlaws.com. My Substack, gregpenglis.substack.com. And, of course, our contribution site, givesendgo.com/actionradio. So I haven't had a chance to play anything. It's been a busy day. We've had a lot of conversations going on here. Play a few things for you all, and I'll see you all tomorrow morning back at our regular time at 7 a.m. Central Time. We'll talk then. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive.
conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elba Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.